skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 64 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And it's going to be a good episode today. We're launching off with a review of the Lego Batman movie, which I'm tremendously excited about because I love Batman and I love Lego.
Synergy.
I'm starting to think we might get a whole range of new listeners. Loads of kids will jump on board and start listening to us. So no effing and blighting today, Gemma.
We are a family-friendly enterprise over here. Also going to be doing a rather interesting topic. Mark, what is it?
It is our top three revenge films ever made. A huge one. And the response on social media and stuff has been insane. At first, I thought it was one of those topics where it wouldn't be too difficult. My lord, there's so many revenge films out there.
I had a whole weekend of revenge watching.
Excellent.
I did the same thing. Gemma, who are we going to be mass debating over?
We're going to be mass debating over Ben Affleck this time.
More synergy, a former Batman.
Well, oh God, it's all falling together on this episode.
Indeed it is. Our rewatch is a little bit different this time. We're not just doing one film, we're doing two. We're doing Inception and Paprika to see how the two films compare and contrast. We'll get into that in some deep, deep detail later on. We're going to do the usual stuff like listener questions, prize giveaway. We've also got a brand new game called List and Shout, which I'll be describing to you later on in the show.
Guys, I just want to stop you right now, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you know, I'm an only child. You know this. And on the episodes, we hear how Ben and his brother is doing this and watching this. I'm sick of not having any brothers in my life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You wouldn't understand because you both, you know, this is a difficult heart. You know, this is the opening up of Mark now, really telling you about his childhood. But this week, this is the craziest thing ever. The door went and I had 32 brothers suddenly in my lounge.
Yeah. Wow.
You know the cider company that we were drinking a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
I certainly do, yes. Mm-hmm.
They've sent us 32 bottles of different varieties. So I'm talking coconut and lime.
Yeah.
The toffee apple one, which we plugged and really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. There's strawberry and kiwi. There's ginger. Ginger cider. So here's a bottle each of coconut and lime.
I am digging this. I like this coconut and lime
quite
a bit.
What are you thinking?
Bloody gorgeous.
So we've been plugging Strongbow for what?
Oh. 2 years now.
2 years.
Minimum.
And we got nothing. Not
Jack
even a sweet.
Shit.
These guys have come along, my new brothers, and they've given us bottles and bottles of cider. So, you know, let's have a sip.
Okay.
Oh, I do like that.
That shouldn't work, but it does.
It's really,
that
really,
is
good.
Really good.
Yeah. Really good.
This is brilliant.
It is fantastic.
So thank you, guys.
Yeah, welcome to the family.
Thank you, brothers. And on that tack, you've just mentioned the fact that I have a brother. This episode comes out on February the 11th. Which is my little brother's birthday. He'll be turning 12. So, Ethan, if you're listening on the sly, like I know you do sometimes, happy birthday, little monkey.
Happy birthday, Ethan.
Yeah, happy birthday. Have a cider on us. Yeah.
he's
you're
young.
A brother too.
He's only 12. Give it 2 years, then I'll get him on the beers. Something I wanted to talk about briefly before we launch into the show. In recent episodes, we've been talking about... We talked about Split. We reviewed Split last time round, and we talked about how, you know, hopefully that would then lead to a sequel to Unbreakable, a film that we all love. In the past, we also talked about Donnie Darko a couple of episodes ago and talked about how we were hoping for a sequel to that at some point in the future. Well, bugger me if both of them haven't been heavily hinted at in the past week.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's not just a... I think this is a conspiracy. This is us setting the future. Because I saw a new listener the other day tweet saying that we talked on the very, I'm talking literally episode 5 or 6, that Ben was talking about the possibility of a Blade Runner sequel.
Holy hell.
Do you know what?
And that was before it was announced,
That was before it was announced.
Yeah, man, we've got the hot hand here.
Bloody
Mac
hell.
And Me Too. The Room 2. Best Friends is coming out now with Tommy.
It is, isn't it?
I'm telling you, we are the setting... The world of sequels.
I've got a feeling that these top executives who are devoid of their own ideas are just listening in to the Skip to the End podcast and going, they've done it again, lads.
Shall we unleash the lawyers?
The movie Kings and Queen have done it. Well, yeah. I want to cut of the bunts for these films.
Or a ticket to the premiere.
That'll do. I'll take that.
Yeah.
Well, where do we go from here?
Let's get started.
As always, let's kick off with a top three topic. This time it's top three revenge movies. And I think I just said my lord, I didn't realise how many revenge movies were out there.
So many revenge films.
Which you don't realise, do you? You start reading about them again, you're like, oh shit, that probably does actually class as a revenge film.
Yeah. And it makes you realise that pretty much all of Tarantino's films are revenge films.
Ben, let's kick things off. Tell me your first one.
What's the exact opposite of shocking you? Because that's what I'm about to do. Old Boy.
Oh, me too.
You could have, you know, the odds you would have got, it would have been 25 to 1 on or something for me to pick Old Boy. It was bang obvious. It's a great film, isn't it, Gemma?
Oh, hell yes.
It's a magnificent Korean film directed by Park Chan-wook and starring Choi Min-sik as Oh Dae-soo. And the plot, to try and summarise, is it's a chap, Oh Dae-soo, who is kidnapped and then held in a small room as a prisoner for 15 years. He doesn't know who kidnapped him and why. He's then released from this room after 15 years. He's given a mobile phone, some money and some clothes, and then he has to try and figure out who it was that captured him and then take revenge on them. But the interesting thing about this film is there's kind of a two-way revenge going on, because it's not just Oh Dae-soo trying to take revenge on the person who's captured him. You later find out that the person captured him to take revenge on something that Oh Dae-soo did in the first place. And it's just a fantastic film.
It's a double bluff, isn't it? It really is. And I've never seen a film where a double revenge kind of takes place. It's more of what you would probably see on a Community episode, where it's things get out of hand. But boy, do things get out of hand on here.
Big time.
I mean, come on, if you haven't seen the film.
This is it. I was kind of worrying about talking about this. Do I want to give too much away? Because there are kind of two twists in this film. One of them comes halfway through the film, and then the other one comes at the end.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of thinking we don't spoil the end one.
All right, then.
So let's talk about the middle one. So halfway through the film, you find out that the person who trapped Oh Dae-soo was a chap he went to school with. Oh Dae-soo had seen this guy called Woo Jin having effectively an incestuous relationship with his own sister.
Yeah.
And Oh Dae-soo then told all his friends at school about it, and this led to the sister then killing herself. So Woo Jin obviously was rather annoyed at this. Just a little bit. And then he harboured a lot of ill feeling towards Oh Dae-soo and then eventually set up this thing to trap him and keep him for 15 years. That's something we learn halfway through the film, and that's the first kind of big shocker, like, oh shit, okay, that's why this has happened. Eventually, Oh Dae-soo is then able to find Woo Jin, and that's when the real gut punch twist at the end comes.
We should keep quiet.
Should we keep quiet on that? I know this film is from, 2003? It's 14 years old, and if you haven't seen it by now, you're a mug. But I kind of don't want to ruin it for people. It's too big.
No. And as well, remember, it's part of the Vengeance trilogy as well. I mean, the first film was Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, which unfortunately I have not seen, but the third one I certainly have, which is Lady Vengeance. Completely the same theme of this vengeful kind of life that these characters choose to use. It just ties it in so beautifully with the rest of the trilogy.
And whenever I think of this film, the first thing that comes to my mind is the corridor fight scene.
Oh my God, yes. All one take. Kind of like us.
Oh yeah, this is all one take.
The choreography on that is outstanding. I remember we watched Daredevil and people compared it, that one scene, but it still doesn't get anywhere near as good as Old Boy's choreography. It's outstanding.
Yeah. Also, another scene that gets me every time I think of Old Boy is the live octopus eating scene. Oh. And it's almost a foreshadow of what the whole film is, you know, visceral, raw, unapologetic and confrontational. How could it not be Old Boy for a topic like this?
That scene, the octopus scene, so Oh Dae-soo is literally eating live octopus, and it's not CGI, it really happened. Choi Min-sik, who plays Oh Dae-soo, he is in real life a Buddhist, and Buddhists don't believe in, you know, harming animals, but he had to eat these live octopus, so he had to say a little prayer before he ate each one, because they had to do several takes to get it right.
Like Aretha Franklin.
Mark, have you got round to watching the Christ awful American remake of Old Boy yet?
I'm waiting for you to pull out your phone now and show a recording of me committing to that.
No, you've always been very vocal about how you won't watch it.
I'm still boycotting it. And when you started the topic, you never actually said if it was the original you were talking about.
Or the most recent. Yeah, the original.
I will never ever, I'll never watch the remake. You did, didn't you? Because you were curious.
Yeah. The thing is, I want you to watch it because after I saw it, I told you how shit it was. But there are certain things in it that I can't really go into detail until you've seen it. You won't really understand my wrath until you see it for yourself.
Oh God,
have to see how bad it is.
See, even I haven't seen it as well, and I'm the curious side of me is going, go on, watch it.
I'm just gonna have to pull it out as a future rewatch, and then you're buggered. You're gonna have to watch it.
I have heard that they have changed major major plots in this,
really?
Which is kind of criminal.
There are things in it that just are so entirely illogical that they've just changed too much to try and make it Hollywood, and it doesn't make a lick of sense.
Oh blast. Should we stay with the Korean one then?
Don't know how to top this, to be honest, guys. That's the one that's the icing on the cake. I was going to choose it, but I knew that Ben was going to choose it. It's going to go hand in hand when you say to Ben a revenge film. It's impossible not to. Mm-hmm. So for my first choice, I'm going for a film called Blue Ruin. Have you both seen it?
I still haven't.
It's not.
From the guy who did Green Room, yeah.
Yes, so it's an early film. It's a very low budget. I'm talking shoestring budget. The way it was sold to me is my friend told me that if I liked No Country for Old Men, Falling Down, Reservoir Dogs and Taxi Driver, to watch Blue Ruin. Mm-hmm. I mean, looking at Ben now, you can see he's like, yep.
I like all those.
This isn't your average killing film where 50 people get killed in 30 seconds. This is a raw, real... It reminds me of Hell or High Water, the chase where it is very realistic. It's not a gun and an hour of chasing. When it comes to the final killing, so I'm not going to ruin too much about this because it is a very, very good film and people say it's one of the best independent films of the last few years. We're notified by this character called Dwight. He's living on his own. He's quite a isolated character. We don't know much about him, but we find out that the person that killed his family is coming out of prison and being released. It's not one of those films where it's 2 hours then of him chasing down this person. I can ruin this bit for you. He goes out and finds that person that committed the murder and kills him straight away. Mm-hmm. And when I say kills him, it's not one of those artificial, it kind of looks okay deaths. It's a screwdriver in the neck. Oh. Reminds me a bit of Girl on the Train, that blood spraying out.
Yeah.
Realistic death. None of this over the top. It reminds me of Tarantino, how he does deaths, where you think, God, that is horrendous. It's gritty, it's gory, but then the film is all about the family of the killer going against him and his family. So it's a big feud. It's not a one-on-one.
It's a bit like a gory episode of Family Fortunes.
I'd watch it.
Les Dennis is the killer, yeah.
Survey says.
But it's set in rural Virginia, and it's right. The choreography and everything for the budget it's on is stunning. And I know that you will both love this because you love Sicario, because you love Hell or High Water. Yes. It's that kind of grittiness and that... They're not low budget, are they, Sicario? Because you've got all the cast and stuff, but it doesn't look like a blockbuster. No. It doesn't look Hollywood.
There's no sheen on it, is there? Yeah. It's very
no
grainy.
Country for Old Men. So all I'm going to say is I want you to both check it out at some point. There's no rush, there's no deadline. Come back to me. Mm-hmm. But this film is outstanding and it got a lot of reviews that were giving it 5 stars, 10 out of 10s.
Wow.
And it led to Green Room.
Yeah, because I've seen Green Room, mm-hmm. which I really enjoyed. And the first thought after I saw that was I need to seek out Blue Ruin. I just haven't got around to it yet, but I intend to.
It's an outstanding film.
Brilliant. For a split second, you saying the main character is Dwight, I was thinking he was like a mild paper salesman who owns a beet farm in
Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Him versus Jim with Cousin Moe's. That's a whole different film.
I'd love it if it was Cousin Moe's.
It would be good. But yeah, great film. Do it soon.
Brilliant.
Is it back to me? I'm going with a British film this time from 2004, Dead Man's Shoes.
Ooh.
Never seen it.
Neither have I.
Have you never seen Dead Man's Shoes?
It was one of our most popular ones that came from social media.
Really?
Every single person had it in their top three.
This is Paddy Considine, right?
It's Paddy Considine, yeah. It's written and directed by Shane Meadows, who is basically the Midlands version of Scorsese. Pretty much all of his films are set in and around Nottingham, which I find fascinating. And it stars Paddy Considine as a chap called Richard, who has been away at the army. Whilst he's been in the army, his little brother Anthony, played by Toby Kebbell, he's kind of mentally disabled, and he's been hanging out with this group of local drug dealers in Matlock.
That's a nice area.
That rock and roll gangster town of Matlock, Derbyshire.
That's where you pick up the A-class stuff.
Yeah. He's been hanging around with these drug dealers and they've basically been abusing him and been really awful to him, you know, taking advantage of the fact that he's, you know, mentally disabled. When Richard comes back from the army, he finds out about what's happened to his brother and he decides to take his revenge. And there's 6 or 7 members of the group and he essentially hunts them down one by one and murders them in quite graphically brutal ways. Like one of the guys, he gives him an upward palm strike to the face that just straight up kills him in one go. There's another guy, he captures him, chops him up and stuffs him in a suitcase. There's one guy... where he just shoots him at point-blank range in the face. It's really, really brutal in the quiet, sleepy town of Matlock, Derbyshire. And it's a really brutal film, but it's a magnificently acted film. Paddy Considine is one of the best British actors going, and this, for me, is his best performance. He's so cold. He's this cold, emotionless guy, because, you know, he's army-trained, but he's also doing this for pure vengeance because of what happened to his brother. I don't want to go into the details of the ending again because there's a big twist at the end of the film, and neither of you have seen it, and I don't want to ruin it for you because it's too good to ruin. Shane Meadows... He's a guy who, again, similar to Blue Ruin, he's a guy who works with small budgets but really makes these great pieces of work. What he does with this film is he intersplices the current day with the stuff that happened to Anthony in the past, and that's all shot in black and white. And then there are a couple of scenes where the drug dealers, you see it from their perspective, and they're tripping on this concoction of drugs. And you're flicking between their drug experiences, the present day and the black and white past. And it reminded me a lot of Natural Born Killers.
Oh,
you know, the trippy desert yes. drug scenes in Natural Born Killers. Yeah. The stuff that Meadows does that's very like Oliver Stone in that. So it's low budget, it's gritty and it's raw, but it's a fantastically directed film and a brilliantly, brilliantly acted film. Keble and especially Considine, unreal.
Need to see this.
It's sold when the yeah. Natural Born Killers mentions. I'm just, we did that as a rewatch.
We did.
And absolutely bloody loved it. But when I saw it on social media, if I had more time this week, it's one of those ones I thought, if I watch that, it could make it, because I've just, it's not just one yeah. or two comment. Mm. Everyone was saying it's the ultimate revenge film. Mm-hmm. Oh man, this is good. This is an episode where we can share stuff. You're going to go and watch Blue Ruin.
Hell
I'll
yeah.
go and watch this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what I like.
One of the funny things about this film as well, which you guys won't find so funny because you haven't yet seen it. Those that have will get this. All the gangsters drive around in an old Citroen 2CV. I don't know if you know what a Citroen 2CV looks like, but it looks a little bit like a Volkswagen Beetle. It's one of those. and theirs is green and white. And it's not. It's the least gangster car you've ever seen. And there's these six gangsters squashed up into this car. And it just lends this innate humour to the film that sort of takes away from the overt bleakness of it otherwise. It's just a great visual. It's a really good film. Check
does it
out.
Take you too much out seeing this no, comical bit?
No, it kind of works, because one of the things that Meadows does, which is really smart, is that you spend almost as much time with these drug dealers as you do with Considine. Mm. You kind of see them, the mundane lives they lead of dealing and using drugs, and you see them as people, horrible, nasty people, but people nonetheless, and that's just kind of who they are. Yeah, it's really good.
Doesn't make it as one-sided as probably most revenge films are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Massively great. Oh, I'm excited now. Brilliant. This is good.
Brilliant.
Come on then, Gemma.
Okay, I'm going to take you to 1973, and I'm going to take you to the film that inspired Kill Bill, Lady Snowblood.
Wow.
I've never heard of it, nor have I seen it, obviously.
Okay, this is what Kill Bill wants to be, and Quentin Tarantino has openly admitted that this was one of the main inspirations, so much so that the main song of this film is the closing song of Volume 1. And it's by the star Maiko Kaji, who plays Lady Snowblood herself. So a little bit of a synopsis. It's about this young girl who is basically leading a vengeful life. She's there to avenge the death of her mother, who got treated very, very poorly by four or five particular people. They murdered her husband right in front of her, captured her, raped her, and essentially framed her for a murder. So she's in prison. She gave birth to this lady, Yuki, her name, and Yuki has been raised to know nothing but vengeance, to find these people, make a little bit of a hit list, and take them out one by one. You've mentioned in the past, Mark, about Blood and Snow going absolutely beautifully. You would jizz over this film because there's so much blood and so much snow in this, and it's visually a beautiful film to watch, but it's also one of the most glorious films to watch as well. The blood, anytime there's a death or an assassination, the blood is completely over-exaggerated. So remember the House of Blue Leaves scene in Kill Bill?
Yeah.
Whenever she struck one of the victims, the blood would just spurt
that spray.
Out.
Spray.
This is it. This is where Quentin Tarantino has basically gone, I'm just going to borrow this bit here, bastardize it, and make it into one big, huge film all throughout the world. This is the original. It's flawless. The fact that Yuki is this fragile-looking woman, she's beautiful. She looks like a flower. Super duper decadent, like, oh, she's so delicate in this film. However, the opening scene as well, the way how she assassinates one of these people that she's after, she's dressed as a geisha, she has this lovely umbrella, but in the umbrella is a sword. She obliterates everybody, and then the movie kicks in.
That's the start.
That's the start, yeah. But it is art.
What year was it from?
1973.
Ooh.
But this film's art.
I'm glad you said that there's a lot of snow and a lot of blood, because otherwise the title would be very misleading.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Lady Concrete Grass, I don't know. Not the same. But yeah, if when people say Kill Bill Volume 1, I urge you to go and watch this film. It's you'll realise that this film is the bee's knees, the kitty's titties, the everything.
I think you'll find I have a copyright.
Also, remember, we're appealing to children now. So
oh,
we're not
oh Christ.
Jizzing or spaff or wow. Everything else you've said so far, potty mouth.
I've not done well on this, have I?
This is a great topic. It is really
it's fantastic,
getting,
isn't
I'm
it?
Just getting the list. I'm not going to be able to go to work next week. I'm just going to have film fest
let's
at
just,
my house.
Let's
everyone's
just do
welcome.
It. Let's do it.
I'm going to follow up with a film that I'm not actually sure if either of you have seen this, but it makes, for me, films like Fight Club, Boys Don't Cry, and Requiem for a Dream seem like Disney.
Christ.
Irreversible.
No. Have
you seen this?
Sadly, I have, yeah.
I've not seen this.
Brutal.
It's a weird one because I want to say to Ben, have you seen it more than once? Because
no.
I believe it needs multiple viewings to kind of appreciate the merit of it. I really do.
I suppose so, because when you see it for the first time, and in my experience the only time, you tend to focus on one particular thing. And you know what thing I'm referring
massively.
To.
Massively. So
I'm all ears.
I won't spoil it too much, but it's filmed backwards. So the film starts with these two guys going to a club. It's a gay club called The Rectum.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, your target audience is there.
They're carried out by police officers, and we're obviously thinking, what's going on? What is this reason? Now, Monica Blue. I can't. I want to get my pronunciation.
Bellucci.
I was going to say that exactly like Ben just said. Is an outstanding actress that we don't see enough of. You know, we don't see much of her, and I think she's fantastic. We saw her in Bond, didn't we, recently?
She's
Passion a stunning woman. Very, very good actress. Mm-hmm. In this scene that we see following this nightclub scene is one of the most harrowing, ruthless, disgusting, realistic rape scenes you'll ever see. She's in a subway, and this rape scene is not a 2-minute scene.
It's
I'm talking
10 minutes,
sort of
isn't it?
10 whole minutes.
I've heard of this film. Yeah.
The violence, the way it is portrayed, the way she's grabbed, the way that she's... Her facial expressions is... It is disgusting. Mm-hmm. It makes you feel sick, and you do sweat. You're like, this is so uncomfortable to watch, but it makes you understand why this guy is going to get his revenge. His wife is being raped, and now you're going to understand why he is so angry, and the revenge to him is so important on a whole other level. Skip a few scenes. Now, this film, which I didn't realize, Ben, this is crazy, only has 19 scenes in the whole film.
Really?
In every single scene, there are no single edits to those parts.
That's how
it makes it so raw and so intense. So you're just watching this one scene, then another scene. The revenge scene that we see is a fire extinguisher in this club bashing this guy on the head. Now, you know on Drive when it feels uncomfortable with the elevator.
Yes.
That does seem like Disney. Yeah. I don't care what anyone says.
Oh my God.
I've just told you about a 10-minute rape scene. This a fire extinguisher into this guy's head is 4 minutes long. Bang, bang,
Jesus.
Bang. You're seeing his skull break, his nose break, his eye socket all explode, his jaw dropping off.
Bloody hell.
Unless you see this, you can't summarise how you need to be prepared for this. So Gemma, you're probably going to go and watch this now, because we're all going to go and watch each other's films,
I'm sure.
Be prepared, because it is grim. And I've seen bad, violent, horrible, disgusting films that people always talk about, the ban list. This is disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it is an amazing revenge film,
because it's a great revenge film.
The best way you're going to get back for your wife being raped.
And the fire extinguisher scene, as horrible and as grim as it is nowhere near as bad as the rape scene for me. I don't know why it is, but I think people would tend to agree with me that sexual violence is just harder to sit through than standard violence.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're pretty much desensitized to people having their heads smashed in with things by now. But sexual violence, really gruesome, graphic, extended rape scenes, when we as a people aren't desensitized them, and let's hope we never are.
Such a taboo subject as well, isn't it? Like, I remember back in the 70s when Straw Dogs was out, because that was renowned for a sexually violent scene as well, and that was banned for however many years, as was A Clockwork Orange as well.
Yeah, the scene in Straw Dogs that you're referring to, the rape scene in that, it was pretty graphic, and it was more for the fact that at the start of the rape scene, she seems to be enjoying it, and that's what people really hated about that, and that's why the British Board of Film Classification cut that initially.
Mm.
This is rare for me, but the listeners usually jump on board. I love seeing the tweets that come by where people buy The Thing and Donnie Darko and go on Netflix. I do want to say to the people out there, be prepared, because I will put it on record now. It's the most devastating piece of cinema I've ever witnessed in my entire life, so be warned. But it is a piece of art, and as cinema goes, it is a masterpiece.
Wow.
Warning, it's not as good as Step Brothers or anything else that me and Ben have introduced to people and stuff like that. So be prepared.
Oh, pandemic.
God, it's a bit of a low topic. Rape, murder. Come on, Ben, let's...
I can't exactly brighten your day. It's another revenge film.
Yep.
A couple of years ago, my friend Steve, his wife was out for the day. I think she was away for the weekend. So whilst the cat's away, the mice will play. So I went round to Steve for a bit of homebrew, some food, and he was like, "Oh, let's put on a movie. Have you ever seen this one? No, what is it? Harry Brown.
Oh my God,
never seen it. Let's watch that. Let's throw that on.
Great film.
Good Lord, that film absolutely blew me away. So 2009 British film starring Michael Caine. Michael plays Harry Brown. He lives on this rough London housing estate, which has been completely overrun by violent, youthful thugs. They are in the alleyways. They're throwing dog shit through people's letterboxes. There's an underpass that leads you into the main part of the city that they kind of just house. They all live there, so the older people and their families can't get through the underpass. One day, Harry Brown is supposed to be going to visit his dying wife in hospital, but he can't get through the underpass, so by the time he gets there, she's dead. Then his best friend Len gets beaten to death by these scumbag youths who hang around on the estate, and Harry just decides to take his revenge. He goes to a local drug dealer, buys a gun from him, then murders the drug dealer with the gun he's just bought from him, and then goes on a rip-roaring revenge ride and just destroys all these dirty little bastard chavs. And it's a magnificent, magnificent thing, especially because one of the little chav bastards who gets killed is played by Plan B. He's one of those rapists they have now.
I forgot about him.
Yeah, most people have. He's an atrocity. It's a superb film. Have you seen this?
It's brilliant.
I haven't.
You haven't? Oh, really? Get involved
great
in it.
Great film.
And it's really nice seeing Michael Caine go back to his gritty roots. It's like his old 70s film
like
when
Get
he was
Carter.
A badass. Exactly like Get Carter. Because in recent years, because he's grown into a bit of an elder statesman of acting, he plays more aristocratic roles, or he's like posh butlers, or, you know, multimillionaires, billionaires of corporations. So to see him playing just this down and dirty guy taking the law into his own hands was fantastic. And it's one of his best performances, because not only is he this steely, determined ex-marine who wants to clean up the streets, he's also this vulnerable old man who's just lost his wife and his best friend. And Caine plays both sides of that character impeccably. Love him in this film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, what a great shout. Mm-hmm. It is fantastic as well. And also as well, if I remember rightly, going back to that that rapist, Plan B, mm-hmm. He did a song with Chasen Status called End Credits, and that is from the film Harry Brown. And there's always a little bit of this music video that pisses me off to high heaven. So there's a lot of shots from the film. And there's a bit when Harry Brown is on by the canal and he's sort of on the floor, sort of like wounded. And Plan B has superimposed himself rapping along or singing along to the track whilst making gang signs over his body.
Christ. We hated him anyway.
Dickhead.
Yeah, him more. The director of this film is a chap called Daniel Barber, who prior to this had only directed a short film, which was nominated for an Oscar. And since this, he's only done one other film called The Keeping Room, which I've never seen. But it's a real shame because this film looks magnificent. It's a superbly directed film. He manages to bring out a weird kind of beauty in the gritty, rundown, shithole London housing estate that the film's set on. It's impeccably directed. Really, you know, watch it and look out for that. And I really want to see him do more.
I think I read that he's taken up hairdressing.
Thank you very much.
You are a
thank you very much.
Dickhead.
This topic needed a bit of
shush.
Christ. We're laughing. It was going to be tough after.
We're crying inside.
Yes, come on.
Yeah. Okay.
Gemma, your final choice.
My last one. And I'm sticking with the 70s again, guys, because it was a great era for some good old-fashioned revenge. 1976, Stephen King's Carrie.
Oh, lovely.
As a teenager who has gone through I was never a popular kid at school. I was never really
you're popular now.
Well,
thanks to us.
But I was sort of an in-betweener, so I wasn't popular, but I wasn't like not popular. But this girl was down at the bottom. Yeah, you know.
That's what her parents told her when she came home beaten up.
You're just as special as the next one. But this girl, God bless her, you know, we open the movie with her discovering that she's just got her first period. As a female, not the most greatest of things to have happened because it's pretty distressing. But when other girls in the changing room are sort of throwing tampons at her, that's pretty harrowing as well. So this kid has not got a break in life whatsoever. Couple that with the fact that she's got an absolutely overzealous religious mother as well. That is just a masterful, hilarious, unintentionally hilarious performance. But this kid just does not have a break at all, you know. And one of the girls that actually picks on her starts to feel sorry for her and goes, you know what, we've got a prom coming up. Tell you what, I'll lend her my boyfriend, you know. Let's make sure she has one great night at least.
She what, lend her the boyfriend?
Well, she did, yeah. I mean, she kind of got a boyfriend to, you know, talk to her and go, oh, do you fancy going to prom? She's like, yeah, all right, then what's up? Let's do this.
A bit like Napoleon Dynamite with Kip.
It's exactly like that. Yes.
Yes, exactly like Napoleon Dynamite.
Mirror image. So Carrie all of a sudden has this purpose. You know, she's going through puberty, but she's now going to be going into prom with one of the most good-looking guys in the school. And it all goes very, very well until one of the bullies decides, no, she's going to pay. She's going to pay for nearly taking away my prom rights. So she murders a pig with her boyfriend, a young John Travolta, may I add.
I didn't know he was in that.
Oh, yeah, he's in it.
Very, very
he is
young.
A douchebag in this.
Full set of hair.
Yeah, I know. No plugs whatsoever. And they decide to completely ruin her night. So they get a load of pig blood. get it over her head as she's walking up to the stage to collect her prom queen crown, tip it all over her, and all the hell breaks loose. She's had enough. And she, it's probably worth saying she's got telekinetic powers all throughout the film.
But yeah, just throw
that's
that
a
in.
Little small. Yeah. Little
and then this completely tips her over the edge. And without even lifting a finger, she exacts revenge on the whole entire school. There's not a lot. I mean, one really comes out with a bandage around their arm, do they?
Now, I'm not a woman. Oh. I'm not. So I don't know. I don't know how sort of how true to life this whole film is.
Okay.
What was your first period like?
Are we really going there?
Are you asking Joe or me?
Oh yeah, well I moved an ashtray with my head. What do you think?
I don't really want to know.
We'll save that for period.
Yeah, but it was such a great metaphor for the whole going through puberty and experiencing all this journey into womanhood. But unfortunately, Carrie's journey into womanhood meant becoming a massive serial killer.
Ugh.
But yeah, but you kind of feel like her actions are justified though, because they were absolute bitches.
As far as Stephen King adaptations go, it's very true to the book.
Oh, it
and
is.
It's also one of the best films I've seen,
it's
got the right amount of budget. Yes, you can go for The Green Mile. It's going to be good when you've got that sort of budget and debutant. Same with Shawshank.
Jesus.
You know you're going to do well, aren't you, with Shawshank?
Yeah,
about the cast. But this film is just right. It's not it's not TV budget and it's not Hollywood blockbuster. And I think the acting in itself and the visuals, it is great.
Yeah, they're all going to laugh. For you. They didn't,
good.
Did they? They didn't laugh at all. They were dead.
Did either of you see the remake?
No, because I refused to.
Hit Girl's in it, isn't it?
Yeah,
Hit Girl
Chloe,
is the main person, Chloe Grace Moretz.
That's the one. Didn't bother. Because
there's
she's
no need.
And as well, she's too pretty. She's too.
Oh, that's harsh on Sissy Spacek.
Oh no, she's lovely. You know, pop a bit of mascara on her. Hello. Ding dong. So yeah.
Great choice.
Thank
well, I'll finish it all off with a film that I hope one of you have seen, otherwise it's another one you can't contribute on. It's a very, very good film called Hard Candy.
Yes.
Oh my God, yes.
Excellent. Ellen Page.
I think it's Ellen Page's finest ever performance. She is flawless in this film. The film is all about, it's a horrible story. It's got a 3-week kind of build-up of a guy chatting to a girl. The guy's 32 years old and I think the girl's 14.
Mm-hmm.
It leads to a meet-up where she gets his drink and spikes it. The next thing we see is the power of a 14-year-old when the kind of tables turned and she's in control. He is drugged up, he's waking up, and suddenly we see the ultimate in revenge. It is kind of, I don't want to say like Saw, because Saw has now kind of ruined its legacy, but it's that horror and that discomfort of seeing this guy realizing what's about to happen to him. The torture he goes through, spoiler for anyone that hasn't seen it, the operation that she performs herself at 14 years old to remove the knob. I have to say this because I need to make a bit of comical about this because it's disgustingly...
Just pops his knob off.
It is disgusting. And any guy... So we talked about periods. As a guy, you'll never get this, but with a penis, you sit there and you've been punched and kicked at school in the nuts. I'm sure we have on the playground and it hurts and you feel sick and your stomach
Women
feels...
will never know the pain.
No.
They can yammer on about childbirth,
yes.
You know.
You kick a guy in the balls, and that's six. They say scientifically it's 6 times as more painful than pregnancy.
What,
6.2 yes. times,
I guess. Swift jab to the knackers.
Because it doesn't locate just in the old meat and two veg. You feel it all up into your guts.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
That bit between your belly button and your sack, that is, it feels weird.
Oh.
It's, no not that bit above
no.
that.
We're not
right. button
we're talking your taint. We're talking up in your guts.
Oh, God.
So to watch that
there
and
we go.
Know what it's like is... It's disgusting. You can't even you can't even begin to think the pain he's going through. But it's the fact of the... Again, I keep saying this, but the rawness, the... It's too long. These scenes of watching her kind of contemplating in her head what she wants to do next and how else can I... go one up on the pain and the threshold and how I can make it even more uncomfortable for him. And it isn't really about the performances. It's about the whole paedophilia.
Yes.
And he kind of regrets it. And you see that he's starting to know how bad he is, but he's damaged. He's corrupt.
He's too far gone.
He's too far gone, and that's it.
He can never
he's
go
damaged,
back.
And he can't come back, and that's it.
As great as Ellen Page is in this film, she is magnificent. I thought Patrick Wilson is really good as the paedophile as well.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of I hasten to use the word brave. I don't like to use the word bravery because, you know, no actors are really brave. You're just pretending. But it's brave in terms of your career to go out and play a paedophile. Some actors simply won't do it because they think it'll taint them in some way. Mm-hmm. So for Patrick Wilson to go out and do that role, it reminds me of when Kevin Bacon did The Woodsman.
That's right, yeah.
Fantastic to actually go out and do that and be that, you know, reprehensible, because you can't come back for that. You can't easily make that person identifiable or sympathetic in any way.
Mm-mm. We should do a top three pedos.
Yeah.
Fritos. But no, we should. We should do a top three pedos in film. We need to have some humour in this. Our listeners like us being fun about stuff. So let's hear nicely what our listeners have come back with.
Sure, no worries. So on Facebook, we had Chris Duck, who said The Crow.
Oh, The Crow Bear.
Unreal. I know. It was basically my fourth choice.
It was a tricky topic. So he said The Crow, Hang 'em High, and Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, I guess.
That's a good, funny film.
Ian Biddle said, I Saw the Devil, Old Boy, and Dead Man's Shoes.
Yes.
Pretty much Ben, then.
Pretty much. And Beth Johnson said, Count of Monte Cristo, Hard Candy, and Mean Girls for a Laugh. You know what?
Yeah. Mean Girls counts.
Fair dues.
That was all about Gemma's life, being the unpopular girl at school. Right. But it never turned that
autobiographical. Autobiographical, yeah. On Twitter, we had Katie at Out of Tyne. The Crow, Carrie, and Old Boy.
Yeah.
Great choice.
She's just basically picked one of each of
us.
Good on you.
Moviesaurus Rex at MREX Podcast said, John Wick.
Oh. Yeah.
It's, you know what? The first 10 minutes I cannot watch because it involves the death of a puppy.
Oh.
It's not nice. It's not nice. Rocky IV and Pokemon the First Movie, Mewtwo Strikes Back.
Yes, it's a revenge film. We can take that.
It's the topic. Stuart Randall at Stembot82 said Speed, The Lion King, and Aladdin. And I love this. He said his reason for it was he gets revenge on society.
Who does? Aladdin.
Aladdin, yeah. I mean, that sounds like my great answer from the serial killers a while back, doesn't it?
It's not as bad as that, Gemma.
Lion King's a great one.
And then finally, the Chump Cast at the Chump Cast said John Wick, The Punisher, and Man on Fire, which is a...
I love Man on Fire.
Denzel Washington.
Yeah, that's a great film.
Yeah, brilliant. So, yeah, keep them coming on future topics we're doing.
And I'm talking about future topics.
Yeah.
Hello, it's my turn. So I don't know if you guys are aware, but we got a little thing called Valentine's Day coming up.
Oh, don't you dare.
This is going to suck.
So I'm really feeling in the mood. So for the next topic, we're going to be talking about our top three gangster movies.
L'Amour.
We've been to our local View cinema to watch the Lego Batman movie, the spin-off from, not surprisingly enough, the Lego movie from about 2 years ago. So the Lego Batman movie is directed by Chris McKay of Robot Chicken fame. And we've got the likes of Will Arnett as Batman, Ray Fiennes as Alfred, Michael Cera as Robin, and Rosario Dawson as Batgirl, to name a few. So the film is about Bruce Wayne, who's moonlighting as his brooding alter ego Batman. However, even superheroes can get a little bit lonely. With his loyal butler Alfred as company, he suddenly finds himself bestowed with an orphaned boy he has taken in to adopt, who is Robin. Add on top of that an impending threat to Gotham City with the appearance of the Joker, played by Zach Galifianakis. Batman is going to have to learn the importance of teamwork and friendship and discover that this could be the key to saving the day. So, the Lego Batman movie, it is here and we have watched it. I'm going to throw this first to, I'm going to throw it to Mark first. And I want to hear your first initial impressions of the Lego Batman movie.
I really enjoyed it. It was good fun. And it's weird, but as it's a child's film, it did feel about 20 minutes too long.
And it was only 90 minutes.
And it was only 90 minutes. And I have the worst, shortest... What's that over there? I do. You know this. I have an attention span worse than Dory. I usually enjoy a 90-minute beer popcorn, beer pizza, whatever. And I was going in there with the intention of just switching off and enjoying a silly, over-the-top, fun film that we wouldn't have to analyse the cinematography and the acting performances.
Mise-en-scene.
But about an hour in, I was bored. Yeah. And it's not criticising it too badly because it's still entertaining. But I was getting to that irritable stage of, I hope it's wrapping up soon. It started so well. It had me. And I was like, this is so much fun. And I heard us all laughing. Mm-hmm. I was looking around and all of us smiling away. But an hour went by and I was just getting to the point of like, oh, come on. I don't know. It's not working for me anymore. Ben?
Everything is not awesome. It was nowhere near as good as the Lego Movie for the exact reasons you've just described. I felt precisely the same way, really enjoying it to begin with, and it kind of dragged and sagged. I don't know that the Batman character from the Lego Movie was strong enough to sustain its own film. It just felt a bit threadbare. One thing I would say, though, Gemma, is that you introduced it as the Lego Batman Movie rather than its full title, which is the Lego Batman Movie brought to you by the Apple iPhone. Because yes. Jesus yes. Christ, I know we did a big ass plug for Brothers. Speaking of which, I'm going to crack open my second one. Because I'm thirsty. Oh, this one is a strawberry and kiwi.
Nice. Right.
But they really went full on with the iPhone
thing.
Did. Like every 2 minutes, someone would whip out a phone to take a picture of someone. And it was, without fail, an Apple iPhone. And also, Batman had kind of a sentient computer that ran the Batcave. And it was Siri. Even yeah. in the credits, it said Batman's computer, Siri. As if that's a yeah. real person.
Herself.
Jesus Christ.
And what annoyed me was, you know when you lean on your phone and it does that ding sound of Siri activating? Mm. They were doing that throughout the film quite a bit. And I don't like that sound. It's like the alarm sound that wakes up in the morning. I don't want to hear it. It's too much. Wall-E was good. It did it once, that opening sound when you open up a MacBook, the ding. But this was, like you said, it should have said in memory of Apple or, you know, of the man himself, got his name. That's why I'm delaying it. Thank you. That's what I wanted. But it was... Product placement sucks, man.
Yeah, in a cartoon, product placement is a joke.
Oh, this coconut does work so well with lime, though. It does, doesn't it? Who thought coconut and lime? Well, yeah. Ben, strawberry and kiwi
is going down an absolute charm.
I bet that is awesome. And I bet that's cool when you're part of a team.
Exactly. Oh, well, we're part of a team, and it is bloody cool. Yeah. So, proven.
So, Gemma, are you on the same page as me and Ben, or are you going to be
sadly,
loving it?
I am. No, sadly, I am. I really wanted to like this, and you're absolutely right. The first half is absolutely glorious. Will Arnett is a voice to listen to again and again, but it's not a voice to listen to when the story's not really going anywhere. Mm. It's a real shame because the build-up to this film was great. There's some really great clips on Bruce Wayne or Batman doing like an MTV Cribs kind of YouTube clip that's out at the moment. Really great publicity. But the film itself, it was too long. And for 90 minutes, that's a little bit worrying. Great for kids, but I don't see
is
this.
Is it great for kids?
I worry that it would be because they have shorter attention spans than Mark.
Just. Yeah. But I heard kids starting to turn around to their parents and be like, you could just hear them getting irritable about an hour in. They weren't just like saying, oh my God, look at the colours. Yeah. Like Wreck-It Ralph is about the same time. And you're glued to it for 90 minutes. You love everything about it. This did not have the same charm, feel, drive, everything.
That's the problem. There wasn't much heart or depth to it. And I think that's why, even at the end, spoiler alert, by the way, when, you know, Batman sort of sacrifices himself to kind of make sure that Gotham City is safe again, I did not feel any humanity. No. Not like with Emmett in the Lego Movie. That had real heart. That had real compassion to it. Mm-hmm. But this just felt like a plug. It really did.
Yeah.
That makes me sad.
It felt sort of corporation designed rather than a worthy film. The only thing I really enjoyed about it were the multiple callbacks to previous Batman films. So there's a bit where the Joker first, at the start of the film, he's on like an airship or something, and he's trying to do one of his nefarious schemes. And he says to the pilot, you know, yeah, this scheme will work. And the pilot says, oh, what, like that one with the two boats, which is a reference to The Dark Knight, which I thought was great. And he said, oh, and what about that one with the parade and the Prince music, which is a reference to Batman Returns. And I like those little callbacks. They were genuinely funny. Not going to be funny to a six-year-old.
No.
Funny to us because we know the history of Batman.
Mm-hmm. But again, what you just said then, I think there's another bit where he talks about the same story being 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, and all it was one shot of the Lego world creating Batman Begins, Dark Knight, even the original Batman, and that was beautifully done. I wanted to kind of pause it and see it all, because I was like, this is genius. They've done like the poster of Batman Begins and everything, but what was missing? I don't know.
There was something hugely
missing. I wasn't
laughing
too much.
No.
Yeah. I did
it
at the start.
It was more mirth, like when you go,
chuckles and smirks, but no real laughing.
No gut busting, like, rah.
But we are kind of between us now painting it as if it was a real... When you listen now, you're probably thinking, oh God, it's not great. It is still good fun.
It is. It's entertaining.
Yeah. For the first 20 minutes, I was thinking that I'm in for the best ride ever because I was seeing all these amazing... I am such a child. All these amazing colours. But it was. I was blown away. And the animation is fantastic.
Incredible.
Absolutely unbelievable.
Flawless.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. Flawless.
Yeah.
But it was great. But it just went downhill and never, ever went back up.
Yeah.
As you say there, it was missing something, and I can't put my thumb quite on what it was. It just felt devoid of one little thing. I don't know what it was.
For me, I might be able to help on this. With the Lego movie, we see at the very end, you know, President Business is actually a dad from a kid's point of view.
Yeah.
And I love that because it kind of actually took you back to when you were building Lego as a kid and, you know, building a bond with your parents. And I love that. I love the humanity behind that. But there was just nothing to relate to this film. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, that's probably what was missing. There was... It is so hard to describe.
I think that's a fair point because that original Lego film had that kind of heart and a real depth to it, and then the jokes were on top of that. Whereas this film relied entirely on the jokes,
and they
weren't enough, and the ones there were weren't particularly funny.
Yeah.
If it would have been a denser, you know, denser with jokes and funnier jokes, we could overlook the fact there's not much really of a plot or heart to it, but there weren't enough jokes and they weren't funny enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what was missing.
Yep, we've nailed it. We've actually, between us now, we know what it is.
We've figured it.
Not enough, and when they did deliver, they were shit.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about the kids in the cinema. Now, more fool us, we went to see a kids' film. There were always going to be kids in there, but good God almighty, they were annoying. So right at the start of it, when you see the Joker, you hear a kid go, "That's the Joker! That's the Joker!"
Just in case you didn't catch it.
I think that's why the 90 minutes seemed so long.
Yeah.
And then there was a point where you hear a kid saying, "I want a drink, I want a drink." Either give him a drink or muzzle him. One of the two, because I'm sick of this.
It's the point where Ben stood up and gave him a stunner. I thought that was not very good.
Kick to the midsection. Yeah.
Sweet chin music to the little girl wanting to go for a wee, I thought was a bit uncalled for.
Superman punching everyone out to get out of there.
That's the thing with this podcast. We're not normally, doing our 12As, the 15s, the 18s, those are Marvel, DC films. We have put ourselves in a position where we're going to be surrounded by all these kids, but they're so annoying. Yeah. Opening Maltesers and throwing them everywhere, and you hear the drinks spill everywhere. We take it for granted this adults can do normal things without fucking it up. Yeah.
Why can't a kid drink through a straw without making that hot, god-awful slurpy noise like an adult can?
And if you are going to make a noise when you're drinking it, make sure it's something like Brother's Cider.
Hell yes.
Because if you're going to be noisy when drinking, that's fine. But
bloody lovely.
You're loving that, aren't you, Ben? Mm-hmm. I hope they send us some more.
I'll tell you what I did like about this film. I loved Michael Cera in it.
Yeah.
He was absolutely perfect as Robin / Dick Grayson. Just that childlike kind of exuberance that comes out of his mouth anyway, obviously with roles such as Arrested Development that we've seen with him. He was cast brilliantly in it. And it just fitted with the whole character himself. It was brilliant. I really did enjoy whenever he was on the screen.
He was the right choice, and he was involved in the only joke that made me laugh out loud. It's when he first introduced himself to Batman. He says, "My name's Richard Grayson, but my friends call me Dick." And Batman says, "Kids can be cruel." That's a good joke.
That's a well-constructed joke.
And I was thinking, and that was right near the start, and I'm thinking, okay, if that's the level, it's stupid, funny, daft dick humour. But if that's the level, I'm in, and it just didn't attain that modest level.
Ben wanted more Dick.
More Dick.
Yes. Oh, I wish I'd kind of had that sort of little connections from Will Arnett and Michael Cera, obviously, because they have worked on 3 seasons of Arrested Development.
Four seasons.
Oh, sorry. I blanked that one out of my head because it wasn't as good as the other three. But I was kind of hoping there might be some kind of, for us fans, but hey, I'm probably asking too much because I'm 33. I'm not 10.
One last thing I wanted to talk about. Mark, you mentioned there about, you mentioned DC. The one thing that I actively disliked, I think, in this film, is that they went beyond the DC characters and decided to introduce a load of other characters for which Lego has the rights. So they brought in Sauron from Lord of the Rings and Voldemort from, you know, Harry Potter and all these other different characters. And it's kind of like, we get it. We know you have the rights to these properties. Mm. You don't have to shoehorn them into a Batman film.
Even Gremlins.
Gremlins, yeah.
That was crazy. I was happy at that point.
I bet you loved that.
Yeah. There was
you?
No Billy.
I didn't
but
see Billy.
To see Spike and...
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it wasn't Mogwai, was it? It was Gremlins.
There was a shark as well, and I equated that to Jaws.
Or Deep Blue Sea.
Oh.
There's
clearly,
not just one.
Clearly Deep Blue Sea. Silly me. It was definitely Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, Sharknado 5 has been announced.
Oh,
is it? Yeah.
Christ on a
We're reviewing that on a future episode, I'm sure.
Stick around.
Right, we're devolving into bullshit. Can we score it?
Yeah.
I'm not going to be too harsh. I think if we did go a little bit too critical at times, so I'm going to give it a fair 7.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's a bit too kind. Seven, six. It's a six.
It's a six.
Seven's too kind. Seven's sort of, you know, no, six.
Okay. Yeah, me too. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. Yeah. And that's the end of that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's a 6.
So overall, the Lego Batman movie gets 6 out of 10.
Has anyone got the time?
Oh, hang on.
Oh, what time is it? Could it be?
It's competition time.
Mark is spent.
There we go. So, as you just heard, it is competition time, which means we've got some fantastic prizes to give away. As this is a Lego Batman episode, our good friends at Warner Brothers have given us a Lego Batman bundle.
Nice.
And this consists of, listen to this, are you ready?
Ready.
A sticker set, a button set, a stationery set, an activity set, a beanie hat, a cap, a phone case, a tote bag, a die-cut notebook, a book for the actual film, a lunchbox, a girls' t-shirt, an adult's t-shirt, a child's t-shirt, an umbrella, a full range of men's adult t-shirts, two backpacks, and a ladies' t-shirt.
Sounds like the contents in one of my house.
Bundle. That is a phenomenal bundle. One thing there wasn't in it, though, Lego.
I'm building up to that.
No. Let go of it.
If you're just lovely.
Thank you.
So if you just listen to our review, if you don't, you know, come on, like, we can't make it any easier. I've made the question very, very simple for you. So who does the voice of the character Robin? I think a little clue would be if you've ever seen Superbad, Scott Pilgrim, any of those films, you will know. But also Gemma did discuss him a little bit about 8 minutes ago.
I might have said he was the best bit about it.
Exactly that. Also, our good friends, our newly on board friends, Last Exit to Nowhere, the amazing t-shirt company. And cool. Gemma, did you buy a t-shirt this week from Boogie Nights?
I certainly did. I got a Buck's Super Cool Stereo Store.
And I've got Stillwater on right now, which needs a wash. They've given us some awesome new t-shirts. So for Westworld, which, guys, look at this design here.
Oh, Christ.
It's pretty
That's
beautiful.
That's gorgeous.
Cool. They've given us one of those. Let's make it as simple as we can. We'll get it out on Twitter as well. But who directed the original film of Westworld? Nice and simple.
Yeah.
They've also given us a really nice Aliens t-shirt, which is amazing. Who plays Ripley in the film Aliens? But thank you very much, Last Exit to Nowhere.
They're
awesome thank you. Stuff.
Good to have you on board.
But also, did you see this week? You might have not, but if not, I've got a picture for it. Have you seen that our good friends Dark Bunny have got a new Guardians of the Galaxy 2 t-shirt?
I
like that, yeah.
They're that far ahead, which is awesome.
Showtime, a-holes.
Which WWE wrestler plays the part of Drax? And you can win a Guardians 2 t-shirt. You can be wearing it now, months before the film comes out, and people will be like, that guy's cool, he knows. Do you know what I mean? So thanks very much, Dark Bunny.
Thank you.
Yes, Dark.
Should we announce the winners from the last competition?
Yes.
We've changed it up. Normally I do that first, but you know.
You never know what you're going to get on Skip to the End, mate.
You're never going to know.
Unpredictable.
We had a Donnie Darko bundle, which consists of a really nice hoodie with insides from Dark Bunny, so thanks very much, and some t-shirts. And the question I put out there was, you had to go a bit further here. You had to listen to the last episode and see the score we gave on the rewatch for Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
Do you remember what we gave it? You guys are like ratting.
I want to say 9,
I'm
going to
say 8.
Thomas Durkin got it right with you, Gemma. It was 8. So you're going to win one of those bundles. Did you see the t-shirt as well?
Yes, it's
absolutely
bloody gorgeous.
Awesome. Do you know what, guys? This is why Skip the End are the best. And also Dark Bunny.
Oh, I know what's coming.
Oh, you
Gemma has
God.
Also won a t-shirt. Yes.
Lovely.
And Ben has won a t-shirt.
Woohoo!
Wow.
So,
nice.
As you can see, we've now got some very cool t-shirts with the old bunny outfit on. How cool are they?
It's perfect.
And I've got one as well.
And it's a size small, so it's a good job I've dropped a few pounds recently. It's going to fit me perfectly.
I'm going to have to add on a few pounds, but it's okay, because mine's a medium.
Brute.
What are you trying to say?
You know, at Christmas, when you ate all that cheese?
I know. Actually, no.
No, look at that. Doesn't that look about right?
Superb.
That's very
amazing.
Nice.
That is so, so cool. Thank you so much.
No problem. It's about time we should win stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean?
We weren't thanking you. We were thanking Dark Bunny.
I bought them and just picked them
You're
up.
You're welcome, Ben.
And we gave away a Sing bundle. And this was all you had to do was go on iTunes and leave us a rating. So at Nina Pops, who's Nina on Twitter, by the time you're listening to this, you'll have had a bundle arrive at your house. And you've probably seen quite a few people this week tweeting out they've won it for it.
Sace.
I've just about, and these are gold dust. You've seen how many people have got them, but the film's popular, the bundles are popular. I've got one more left to give away. So leave us an iTunes rating, and I'll make sure that that goes out to someone in 2 weeks' time. Keep entering competitions. Keep coming on our Twitter, at STTE Podcast, or Facebook, /SkipTheEndPodcast. Like us, give us thumbs up. Come on and do everything you can, and you can win like us. You know, look at us. We've won cider. We've won t-shirts.
We're a winner, baby.
We've won number one podcast. We've won everything.
Yeah.
What else is there left to win?
We're winners
at life. The world.
We're winners at life. We've got it.
That's exactly it.
That bit of music suggests that we are now on to movie masturbate time. You know the score now. We pick a name from the pot, we find out who it is, and then what we do is discuss our favourite performance of that said person. So on the last episode, we picked out Ben Affleck, not just a pretty good actor, but also starting to get a bit of a renowned directorial status about him as well. So yeah, Ben Affleck, thoughts?
Yeah, he's a nice guy. I like his beard, his hair. He seems... to be honest, I've heard that Live by Night isn't his strongest film, and I'm annoyed because his streak was flawless.
Yeah, he was 3 for 3 prior to that.
Gone Baby Gone and The Town are so good, and then Argo topped it, and now he seems to have done an orbit.
Oh,
every director does.
It's all right, but this could be like just the one-off or something. Mm-hmm. So
fingers crossed.
Fine. Fingers crossed. Okay, so... as Mark was last time, it's Ben's turn to go first. So, Ben, who have you got?
If either of you, or if anyone else on social media, has the one that I'm about to pick, I will eat a shit sandwich. Hold me to that.
Right, shoot.
I'm going with the character of Dean from the film Extract.
Nope. So,
have either of you... for the social media. Nope. No shit sandwich for Ben.
Put away the loaf of bread. It's not happening.
Have either of you seen Extract?
No.
Has anyone?
Have either of you heard of the film Extract?
Has anyone?
Extract is a comedy that was written and directed by Mike Judge. You will know Mike Judge Beavis and Butthead, from Office Space and from the masterpiece that is Idiocracy. And I think it's his most recent directorial film. And it's not an amazing film. It's a good, fun, enjoyable sort of 90-minute comedy film. It's not going to pull up any trees. It's not a masterpiece, but I love Ben Affleck in it. So in the film, Jason Bateman plays a guy who runs an extract plant where they pull out the extracts from certain vegetables and stuff and then bottle them and sell them. And it's about how this woman, played by Mila Kunis, comes in and basically tries to screw over the plant. His best friend, Bateman's best friend, is Dean, played by Ben Affleck. And Ben Affleck plays this incredibly laid-back, long-haired bartender / drug dealer who keeps giving Bateman's character incredibly poor advice. For example, Bateman thinks that his wife, played by the great Kristen Wiig, is having an affair, but he can't prove it. So what Affleck's character suggests to him is, then what you need to do is force her to have an affair, and then you can then have a guilt-free affair of your own. So he gets Affleck's character to hire a gigolo to sleep with his wife so that then he can have an affair with Mila Kunis' character. And it's really stupid and really fun. But I love Ben Affleck in it because it's nothing like how he usually plays a role. We're used to seeing Ben Affleck as an authority figure. He's usually like a federal agent or a hitman or a caped crusader. So seeing him as this long-haired, disheveled kind of surfer dude, drug dealer, popping Xanax, giving shit advice to Jason Bateman, it's so out of the mold for what I'm used to seeing him. And I love him in this. He's just so laid back and so much fun.
When was this made?
Not that long ago. It was the... I'd say the late 2000s. Noughties, you know, I'd say about 2008, 2009, something like that. It's not that old.
See, I'm kind of sold because it's got Jason Bateman in, and I like Jason Bateman.
Jason Bateman, Kristen Wiig, Mila Kunis, TJ Miller from Deadpool, J.K. Simmons, Oscar winner J.K. Simmons. It's got a great cast. It's a bit of fun. It's also got Beth Grant, which is, I'm seriously questioning your commitment to Sparkle Motion. Yeah. It's fun. It's fun. And Affleck's good fun in it.
I'm on board for this.
The moment he said Mila Kunis, I was like, right, I'll watch it. I'm sold.
I didn't. I said Mila Kunis because that's how you pronounce it.
Yes. I did a Gemmerism there. Rogan.
Jonas Hill.
All right. One all. But yeah. That sounds good. It's weird that I'm not saying I'm an expert now, but the more you're just the expert, Mark. But, you know, I feel like I'm broadening my Horizon of Films. Yeah. And I should have known this existed with such an all-star cast.
Do you like Mike Judge? Do you like Office Space?
Love it.
Yeah. Have you seen Idiocracy?
No.
Wow.
But I love Beavis and Butthead.
Okay, because Idiocracy absolutely rules. Beavis and Butthead is
and King
classic.
Of the Hill.
King of the Hill's great fun as well.
Did you do Basketball?
No, that's South Park. Oh, yeah.
Ignore me.
Yeah. If you like his work that you've seen, you'd like Extract. But as I say, don't go in thinking it's going to change the world. It's the sort of film you put on if you've got 90 minutes before you get to bed on a Sunday night. You want to have a beer and, you know, just chill out before you have to get up for work.
If I'm going to bed before work, I won't be having a beer. I'll be having a
fruit cider. So, by what company, though? That's the important
thing. Yes.
I will watch Idiocracy, I think, more than this, because
Idiocracy
you've told
a
me
classic.
A few times about this film, and it's been meaning to watch it, but I will check it out if I can find it anywhere. I've never heard of it. I'm worried that it's not going to be on Netflix, Amazon.
Or that I've made it
DVDs,
up.
Yeah. But it's all about the favourite performance. A lot of people mix up, and I see social media saying, the best film. It's not about the best film. It's your favourite performance.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Favourite performance.
And talking of favourite performance. Go on, Mark. You'll go.
Do you want to have a guess, guys? Or
it's going to be a Kevin Smith film, methinks.
I think it's going to be Dogma.
I think
Chasing Amy, sorry. Chasing Amy.
Correct.
Yeah.
Holden McNeil in Chasing Amy. It is my favourite Kevin Smith film. On this podcast, we have slated Kevin Smith. We've praised Kevin Smith. His most recent films haven't been fantastic by any means.
No.
But back in the day when he did Clerks, he did Dogma, which, Ben, you've got a love for.
Love's an exaggeration. I like Dogma.
Yep, that's a good thing to say.
One of his films I like.
You could love a sandwich, but you can't love Kevin.
But he's never seen Chasing Amy, am I right?
Yes, why would I?
Because it is a fantastic film,
it really is. Yeah.
It's come through a lot on social media, but it's a fantastic film. Holden and Banky, who's played by Jason Lee, who is one of the funniest guys who I've not seen on screen for a long time. I was thinking about this the other day. Perhaps he's gone back to skateboarding, I don't know. But
a couple of years ago, he did like a detective series that was on Hulu or something like that, and it wasn't particularly successful.
And
I've not seen him since.
Yeah, he was in My Name is Earl as well.
That was a while back now, though.
Yeah, nothing recently.
Just shows how old I really am.
So they're both comic book artists, and everything's going well for them. And they both basically fall in love with the same girl. Easily done. She's also a comic book artist. Holden falls for her in a whole way of besottedness. He is head over heels. And Affleck does give a really good performance. He's not made it. He's not done Armageddon at this point. He isn't the heartthrob that's on posters. He's not got all the millions and millions of pounds and Jennifer Lopez and all this. He did become like that status of like Leonardo DiCaprio after Armageddon, didn't he? He was everywhere. Pearl Harbor, all these massive films. Yeah. This is when he was still trying to make it. So he put everything into this performance. And I do believe that Kevin Smith got the best ever performance out of him. Now he's Batman, now he's director, now he's the king, isn't he? He's got everything. And, you know, Kevin Smith's nowhere near him now, which is quite ironic. So he's there getting this performance. Now, his hopes are actually crushed when he finds out that this girl's actually gay. But that doesn't stop his pursuing thinking that he can turn her. So the film basically is all about him declaring his love and not understanding that she's not actually wanting to be with him because he's male and it's not her cup of tea.
One of two films in which he does that.
But this is
so
on a whole...
It happens in Geely as well, doesn't it?
Well, that's a...
which I consider an unofficial sequel to this.
But that's not Kevin Smith, so that's okay. But the story then tells about the fact that she does fall in love with him and it goes tits up on a whole level that you could never expect. But I'm going to say it now, and it might be 1 month, it might be 1 year, it could be our 10-year anniversary. This will be a rewatch one day, Ben, and your veto card cannot be used.
Fine.
And I do believe...
I guess it
can. I do believe... You heard that.
Wait, it can.
I do believe that Ben... will enjoy this film because he likes Dogma, and it's a lot more like Dogma than Red State or Yoga Hosers or anything else. This is when he wasn't smoking drugs, he was writing
scripts. I find that hard to believe, Mark.
Trust me, this is a good film. And Gemma, would you mind watching it again?
Nah, I do like this film a lot. It's great.
Good.
I'm dreading your next rewatch pick then.
Just remember, I'm doing that in about 25 minutes' time. My pick.
Is it you today?
Yes.
Oh, fuck.
So, Gemma, follow up Chasing Amy.
Okay, so it's more of a recent one for me, but I bloody love him in this. It's Gone Girl.
Oh, yes. Fantastic.
plays Nick Dunn, obviously the guy whose wife has mysteriously gone missing. And why I absolutely love about this is he plays a douchebag so well. Mm-hmm. So obviously, I mean, actually, if you guys want to skip to the end to a previous episode before I came on board, these guys actually reviewed Gone Girl.
For about a week.
it was about 45 minutes, wasn't it?
The early days. But a lady called Amy Dunn, or amazing Amy Dunn, goes missing. And Nick, played by Ben Affleck, has to persuade everybody that he had nothing to do with her disappearance, because there's a lot of things that start pointing a finger at him, suggesting there was foul play by him. What I love about Ben Affleck playing his character is he has to act innocent but also act guilty at the same time. That's a bit of a mission for an actor to do anyway, but he plays this absolutely impeccably as well. He's mastered the art of this really, really well. And the way how the whole lies and truth kind of unravel in front of him, not just the lies of him obviously trying to hide this mistress, this college mistress that he has, but also the truth that Amy is an absolute nutter. He plays it so convincingly for me that you want to feel sorry for him, but you don't want to feel sorry for him because he is a bit of a dick anyway. I mean, he's allowed this affair to happen in front of his wife, or his wife's finally discovered that he ain't such a great guy. Even when they start running out of money, he's still a dick to her. Yeah. But Ben Affleck plays this so, so well. And it's one of the charming things about this film. You shouldn't feel sorry for this guy, but you kind of do.
Yeah.
But you don't, but you do.
It's a tricky tightrope to walk because, as you've alluded to there, he isn't guilty of Amy's murder.
Yeah.
But he's guilty of a lot of shit.
Yeah, he's
a bad husband and an all-round bad chap, generally. Just because he didn't do that one thing doesn't mean he wasn't emotionally abusive prior to that.
And you shouldn't feel sorry for him for
that. No, and it's some of the best casting that Hollywood has done in years. Because I remember reading the book, and he's described as this kind of douche. He's described as a guy who, you know, when he smiles, you can't really tell if he's really smiley or if is it a fake sort of smirk.
Exactly.
And Affleck is all of those things. He's perfectly cast. And he's brilliant in the film. Yeah. He's not just been cast because he looks like a smirking dude. That's just an added bonus. He's an excellent actor as well. He was perfect for it.
Yeah, it was just mind-blowing watching that. And he is Nick Dunn. I'm trying to think in my head who would have played this character better.
No one.
And he made this, without sounding like a TV reality judge, he made this role his own.
I think... And you're going to laugh, but Tommy Wiseau as that character would have been better. I did not kill her. I did not kill her.
It's bullshit. Hi, Amy.
Yes. How good would that be? The police come in and he's there throwing the water bottle. It's bullshit. I did not. That would be good.
Oh, God.
Can we
Hollywood,
make this happen?
I'm copywriting that. You just used the word nutter to describe her.
I did. She was...
That word is... There needs to be a new word invented for this amount of... mentalness and
she
plotting
is.
And forward thinking, and it scared the life out of me. When she's driving along and you're reading the diary entries and you see how he's basically, fuck you.
It's
this is revenge.
And not only that as well, it completely changes the story altogether. It is just so clever, yet unbelievably scary as shit, knowing that
she's
masterminded.
That's a revenge film. That's a great revenge film.
Can I remember?
And the word that's worse than nutter is what she is a sociopath.
Yes.
She is a no-fooling sociopath.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I really enjoyed this. You know what? I don't know about you guys, but I fancy doing this again. I fancy masturbating.
Well, I want to know what social media did first, and then we'll do that again.
No,
she wasn't talking about the game.
Go on, then. Let's see what everyone else had to say.
I like how we're changing things around today. Yeah. The competition stuff, you know, I announced the first one.
I just wanted to get going again, guys, I'll be honest.
It's not like I'm drunk.
It's not because we're all sided up. No.
So, a Beardo Talk film, which is at CaptainBeard93. This is an outstanding film. The Town.
Yes, very good.
Absolutely. I still haven't seen it.
You've never seen The Town?
I've never seen
it. And you're talking about how he's dropped the ball and all this.
I know. I'm a terrible person and I should be shot. But please don't shoot me.
Bill's Beer Report, which is at Bill's Beer Report. Argo.
Yep. Yes.
Just solid.
Stunning. Yes. Marcus at The Marco Guy has gone with Gone Girl. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He says fantastic.
Great.
Jason Short, a very recent film. And I think, Ben, you've seen this as well. The Accountant.
Yes, I thought that was a great film, actually, and he's really good in it.
I thought it was absolutely fantastic, but he said also Dazed and Confused. He's walking around with that bat.
Yeah, the paddle.
Amazing. Couple more. Jim Boyd at Jim Boyd 79. Armageddon. Now, his reason is because of how outstanding the DVD commentary is.
Okay.
You can have that, but Armageddon is shite.
It is terrible.
I hate that film. And the very last one, Fiona Film Fanatic, which is at Fiona Underhill. I've never heard of this, but it's called Forces of Nature.
Yes, I have.
No,
never seen it.
I think I want to say Sandra Bullock.
Don't know.
It's what he got. He went through like a phase of these rom-coms, like Bounce as well, and
Jersey Girl.
Yeah, you know.
I've never seen it, and I probably never will.
No.
There's a bit for some reason in my head. I don't know if you've ever seen this Family Guy episode. You know when they do their cutaways, and they mention about how Ben Affleck can do anything, and he's got the role, and it's just him lying on a couch, and he's reading a script, going, "Hello, hello, yeah, nailed it," and then he walks off to go to a role or something. Basically, he could do anything at that time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anything.
Like, I think it was,
sign here. Here's £1 million or £10 million pounds.
Oh, I got to do a British accent. Hello.
Done.
Nailed it.
Wank. So, as I just said, wank. Yeah. Let's masturbate again.
Right,
who's picking?
It's my turn.
Right. It's gonna take. I think we've been on a good run.
Yeah.
I know there's some names in there that are a bit more.
I'm probably gonna really
ruin it now.
Shall I?
Standard.
I ruin everything.
Yeah.
Right, can I get a drum roll, please?
Yeah.
Okay. So, on our next Movie Masturbate, we will be masturbating over Keanu Reeves.
Oh, that is timely with John Wick 2 coming out very soon.
Brilliant.
An idea. Resilient, highly contagious. Once an idea has taken hold in the brain, it's almost impossible to eradicate. An idea that is fully formed, fully understood, that sticks. Right in there somewhere.
It's rewatch time, and we're doing something different. We're rewatching two films because the rumours are, or the word is, that one of these films heavily inspired the other one, or, if you're less generous, one of these films needlessly ripped off the other one. And we're going to make a decision on that, I think. We'll talk about the films, we'll score them as we normally do, and we'll come to a conclusion. The two films that we're rewatching are Paprika, which is a 2006 anime written and directed by visionary director Satoshi Kon, who's also known for things like Perfect Blue and Millennium Actress. We're then going to compare and contrast that against Inception, Christopher Nolan's masterpiece sci-fi, and I'm giving away my feelings on the film straight away, from 2010, written and directed by himself. Both films deal with dreams, more specifically using technology to enter people's dreams. In Paprika, a device called a DC Mini allows Dr. Atsuko Chiba to access people's dreams for therapeutic purposes in the guise of her alter ego, Paprika. The device is then stolen by someone who wants to invade people's dreams and use them to bend reality to their will, and it's up to Paprika to stop him. In Inception, a group of information thieves led by Leonardo DiCaprio's Dom Cobb use a military device to access the subconscious of their targets. Dom's given the opportunity to have his criminal history erased if he can use that technology to plant an idea into someone's subconscious through a process known as Inception. Yeah. So the plot lines are wildly different, but the core ideas are very similar. Gemma, talk to me. Did you see this? Did you see the difference or the similarities between the two films? Is it something you'd considered prior to this rewatch task that these two films were in some way linked?
I did, yes. Obviously, with the whole thing about entering dreams, of course, you've got the connection there. But not only that as well, I noticed there were two particular scenes that I noticed had been lifted from Paprika, but had been inserted into Inception. An Inception of Paprika, if you will.
Indeed, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so Mark, how about you?
So I saw a lot of people ripping Inception, a new one, really full on, saying that it's Nolan plagiarising, they're disgusted, it's showing how Hollywood has failed. I don't see it on that level at all. It's similar. I've got basically some notes because I struggled with Paprika. Can't even say it. Paprika.
Paprika.
Whatever.
Paprika.
And for me, that's a surrealist film, okay?
Very much.
Massively.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But Inception for me is the opposite. So Inception is not the surrealist film. The plot is too linear.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of similarities, but I don't think people have been fair.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing I want to say. I know we're going to indulge and talk about the films, but there is no way that Nolan got the same storyboard, the same script. No way. And it doesn't deserve the criticism that Nolan has had.
I think the word homage is probably the best way to describe this.
And the thing is, it's not as if Nolan has done this blindly. There was an interview with a French magazine, I think, that you can still find on the internet and use a bit of Google Translate. He was asked, you know, there are similarities between the two films, and he admits, yes, it was one of the films I watched in writing the script for this, and he's admitted that the character of Ariadne, played by Ellen Page, who we've already discussed today, was somewhat influenced by the character of Paprika. So he knows there are influences there, and I think that's the key word. It's influence, it's homage, it's not theft. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not extraction, the term they use for theft in Inception. He has just used something that he liked, along with other things. He said there's elements of Blade Runner and so on and so forth in there, and I agree with that. As Gemma alluded to, though, there are certain scenes, two or three, I would say, that are direct lifts.
Yes.
So should we talk about some of those now? So go on, Gemma, give us an example of a direct lift.
Okay, so for those of you probably seen Inception more than Paprika, I would say. Mm-hmm. So when Ariadne is showing Cobb the world that she has created in the dream, when they're first sort of plotting what kind of world they're going to create for this this heist, if you will, you see her create a bridge with a mirror, and she sort of pushes these mirrors on either side. Mm-hmm. When she puts her hand on one of the mirror shatters and creates this brand new sort of view in front of her. This is the exact sort of thing we see in Paprika. Paprika touches a sort of a view in front of her, and that glass sort of shatters and it eludes into this brand new world behind the glass. That was a definite lift.
Yeah.
That was a definite lift. And also, one of the most famous scenes in Inception is when we see the hotel corridor, when they're fighting sort of 360 degrees all over the corridor. The detective that is in Paprika, that is
Konokawa.
Thank you very much, because I didn't want to do an M. Night Shyamalan like last episode. He has visions of this figure, sort of, which looks like has been shot in the back and is just falling into the floor in slow motion. I think there was a lot of, I wouldn't say that was lifted, but I certainly saw an influence and a homage to that kind of, that particular scene throughout the film as well. Yeah. You know, we do see kind of elements of that.
I think you're skipping around. I think Arthur's fight scene in Inception is exactly the same as that scene in the hallway. I think it's not like homage, it's exactly the same.
The only difference is in Inception, you know, you've got the rotating hallway, whereas in Paprika, it's a melting hallway. Yeah. But even the shot, the angles of the shots are very, very similar. It's clearly been
homaged.
That's what we use.
I thought I'd be kind.
when we steal game shows, that's what we've done.
It's a homage.
But I don't think it's subtly done. I think that is the one scene that stood out for me where it was like, okay, that is to the point.
And there's a third one that people tend not to notice. In Inception, one of the scenes when you go into DiCaprio's mind, you see how he's kept various levels of dreams of his ex-wife or his dead wife, and you see him go down in an elevator to different levels of dreams. The exact same thing happens in Paprika. Konokawa goes down in a lift to different levels of dreams. So there are three, they're the three for me, the three clear, highly, heavily influenced parts of the film beyond the general premise. But other than the general premise of being able to go into people's dreams and beyond those three similarities, the films then do veer off in wildly different directions. Yeah. Let's talk about Paprika for a moment. So in Paprika, this person of Paprika who can access people's dreams, she's there as a therapeutic use. She's the alter ego of Atsuka Chiba. But then the person who runs the company that creates this DC Mini, he decides to use it for his own nefarious purposes. He wants to go into people's dreams so that he can control them and control reality. And then that forces the dream world to blend in with the real world, and it's up to Paprika / Chiba to save it. That's wildly different from what goes on in Inception, and we'll talk about that later. So talk to me more about your thoughts. Mark, one of the things you touched on there was the surreality of it.
Yes, and I won't lie. Remember when we did the rewatch for Spirited Away? And we talked about how it took us where you got pig's heads, you've got random people. It is something that if for a first-time film general, just do you want to come around and watch a film? You put that on, they're going to say this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Paprika, for me, tested me. I'm not saying it's bad. It's a visual treat. It is incredible. But I struggled. I didn't know what was going on. I was lost. I was struggling. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say I don't like it, because visionary, this director I hadn't heard of before, and I think the way he develops the story and the way that he uses his cinematography and the animation is up there as the best. Mm-hmm. But I struggled, and I didn't like the randomness of things. This is where we're different, and I'm sure you're going to say you loved it, and that's a good thing, because you love stuff like yeah. Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle. But this for me was, I didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. I got lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine. I think in its defense as well, that is the whole point of a dream. Even down to the dialogue that some of the characters use when they're wandering around, they're thinking they're in a dream. They say sentences that aren't supposed to be structured correctly as well. Yeah. And I love that. They were saying things like, I don't know, the gardening sausages tend to fly high schoolyard. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something like that. But it was just the fact that that's exactly what dreams are. And I loved the whole... The fact that they leaked that into the real world, and not only that, but into the film, it's beautiful.
And I agree with that entirely. And Mark, you know, don't feel like you've missed out on something by not getting it, because it is kind of the point.
Yeah.
It's a film that you experience more than understand, unlike Inception, which, as you say, is more linear. One of the things that people say in reviews that I've read of Inception over the years is the fact that the dreams don't seem dreamy enough.
Yeah.
They're too linear, they're too straightforward. Mm-hmm. Whereas we know from experience, how many times have you woken up from a dream and it's been batshit insane?
Yeah.
There's been nothing logical about it. Whereas Inception, each of the levels of the dream all make a certain amount of sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Paprika, as you rightly say, Gemma, plays more on the whole idea of dream logic, which is to say very little logic at all.
Mm-hmm. Even with the parades that come through,
it's
a collection of just complete mismatchedness. You know, there's nothing that connects any of them together. That's the cacophony of dreams.
That's my note here. I've literally put marching band. What was all those dolls, animals, objects all about? Because it was just so random.
Yeah.
It was
subconscious nonsense.
It's just, and then the man's face with the humanoid boys around him, and it was great. I mean, visually and colourful and everything. It was a treat. And I bought this on Blu-ray, Ben, because I didn't want to watch like a standard DVD or a stream.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see the best. Yeah. Possible quality, and that's it was my new demo disc. It's almost come around and they want to see what a projector's like in a house. This is my go-to disc now, because it was batshit crazy.
I said to you,
of colours, and
when you said you were going to watch it, I said watch it in your cinema room, because it deserves to be seen on the biggest possible screen in the highest possible definition. It's a beautiful film. It looks amazing. Satoshi Kon, as I say, he's dead now, sadly. He died young, but he left 4 or 5 great films and a couple of great TV series in his wake, and go and find any of them, because he has an eye for visuals that are unlike anyone else in animation, certainly, and even in live action. How beautiful, how crazy does that film look? And Mark, I hope it's a film that you'll go and rewatch and do again, because you won't necessarily understand it anymore, but you'll appreciate it more, because you'll know what's coming, and you'll start to see smaller things.
Even when, you know, when they're in the Japanese theme park, and Paprika sees one of the Japanese dolls that worryingly gives a Nazi salute all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And she sort of jumps over this steel gate. But when she jumps over it, she's free falling. And then she's sort of catapulted into the real world. It's magnificent how this all marries up together. It's stunning.
Don't worry, Ben. I'm going to watch it again.
Yeah.
I've ordered already Perfect Blue and Tokyo Godfathers.
Lovely. Excellent.
Nice.
Yeah.
They're literally like £7 on Amazon.
And the posters for that are in Paprika as well, when he's walking around the cinema.
So I'm going to... I need to watch it again. I think it's one of those films that even if I... Like you said, I don't click, but listening to you guys talk about it is helping me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And did you watch the dubbed or did you watch the...
I watched the English version.
The English language.
English language, yes. Yeah,
so. Historically, I've seen this film...
Many times.
Probably at least half a dozen times. And every time I've watched it previously, I've always watched it with the original Japanese because that's how I prefer it. I'd rather watch the subtitled. This time, because I was making notes for the podcast,
Ditto.
You can't really do that with a subtitle film. So I watched the English dub.
So
it was fine. Mm-hmm. It's not one of the... I've seen terrible English dubs of Japanese films, but this one was okay.
So I watched the dub for my first time because people said, you're going to struggle anyway. So don't make it harder for yourself trying to read while you're also trying to realise why there's a head and this dog and this. So I did have it, and I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, it's absolutely fine. One of the interesting connections, actually, that has only just come to me between this and Inception is the idea of filmmaking. So in Paprika, the character of Konikawa, he's been having these repeated dreams that he can't understand the meaning of. And then when Paprika goes into his mind, he eventually finds out that it's because he, in his youth, was making a film and wanted to make films.
Sorry.
And then he kind of left. He didn't finish his film. He left it to his friend to finish it. And then he died. And then because of that, he has this hatred of films. He won't go and see them. This idea of filmmaking. Something I read about Inception recently is that when Nolan made this, when he wanted to come up with a team of characters in it, he envisioned them as a movie-making unit. So I'll get some of these wrong, I'm sure, because I don't have it in front of me. But Cobb, DiCaprio's character, he's supposed to be the director. He's the one who, you know, shows everyone where to go. Then you've got Arthur, which is Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character. He's the one who does the background work. He's the producer. You have Tom Hardy's character of Eames. He's the one who's out there putting on a show. He's the actor. And there's four or five more of these, everyone.
I'm loving that.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Ariadne, who creates the dreamscape, she's the production designer. And this is something that Nolan has said. So this film in and of itself is about filmmaking.
God, that's completely changed my way of looking at
it. Yeah, yeah. Paprika's
you'll watch it again now.
I need to. Yeah,
yeah. And you'll see how that's all going on.
Who would Mal represent?
Mal, I forget who she is. I think, I can't remember.
Because there's so much, she's one of these sort of like malevolent kind of characters that's there to scupper any chance of them succeeding.
I know that Saito, because he's bankrolling it, he's the producer.
Yep.
No, sorry, he's the studio.
Oh, right.
And then, oh God, who's the other character now? I forget what he is. There's Cillian Murphy's character. He, because it's all playing out in front of him, he's the audience. So it's all this,
so
all these
clever.
Different aspects of
this
filmmaking.
Is crazy.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
It's a whole new light on this film.
It really has. It really has.
Let's talk about Inception now. Let's get honest with this. What do we think of this film? Talk to me. Mark, tell me. Do you like this film?
It's an absolute masterpiece.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Christopher Nolan, I've said it on an episode right when we started, is my favourite ever filmmaker of all time. I love John Carpenter making good films. Yeah. I love Steven Spielberg because he makes good films. But he is a genius on a level that nobody else right now in this world is touching.
Interstellar.
And that is his moment where he dropped the ball. But it's still an amazingly made film.
It's a beautiful looking
film. The scenes in space is Kubrick.
Mm. Yes.
If Kubrick was making films now, they would be what Nolan's doing. I don't care what anyone says. I might look like a twat in a few months. When we get Dunkirk, it will be one of the most amazing choreographed cinematography. Every bit of editing you could ever imagine will look perfection in the way of a world. It will make you feel like you're on that beach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is just, as Paprika is visually beautiful in terms of the world of animation, this is a real sort of rule breaker in terms of the special effects. Well, I don't think we've ever seen anything along this scale. You know, these dream states that we allude ourselves to being in, we actually see something as similar to that in our real world as well. This was just magnificent. A director of photography, Wally Pfister?
Yep.
And he's regarded as one of the greatest in his industry as well. Yeah. And this is just beautiful. It's so pretty to watch.
It's interesting how good this film looks in terms of the effects, because I read there are only around 500 CGI shots in this film, and as far as Hollywood blockbusters go, that's very low. A Hollywood blockbuster is usually around the 1500 2000 mark, but what Nolan tried to do as best he can was do everything in camera rather than using CGI. So obviously things like the city folding in on itself is CGI, but everything in the hallway, the rotating hallway and the fight scene, none of that was CGI'd. That was all. It was used in like a centrifugal set. The same thing they used in 2001: A Space Odyssey for the rotating ship. Mm. So they used this centrifugal set and had stuntmen. And a lot of it was actually Joseph Gordon-Levitt doing his own stunts on wires and stuff.
It's beautiful.
And because, you know, what Nolan says is you want to do as much of it in camera as you can and then supplement it with a bit of CGI here and there to make it better, but don't just go fully overboard with the CGI.
Mm. It's crown and glory. I mean, if we're ever to last days on earth and we're here to recap some of the greatest moments in cinema history, that whole hotel corridor scene has to be in there.
Unreal.
He's a master. I'm just reading my notes here, and I've put that the final hour of this film is the most complicated action sequence I think I've ever seen in film. I think that the attention to detail is second to none. We've talked about the cinematography, we've talked about his editing, we've talked about the score from Hans Zimmer.
Oh, just one of the best scores ever.
It's a bit overpowering at times.
But that gentle piano towards the end, especially the last scene as well, it's just so delicate, fragile.
And he's only just getting going. I still think Nolan's going to be going in 20, 30 years.
I think you're right. And you're talking about the last hour being that important and that good, it's because you're seeing things going on in four levels. So you've got what's going on in the first dream level, which is in a rainy Los Angeles. Then you've got what's going on in a second dream level, which is the... What was the second one?
That was the hotel room.
Yes, the hotel. What's going on in the hotel. Then you've got the third dream level, which is on the outside the snowy fortress, which is very James Bond.
Yes.
Yeah, it's his audition.
Yeah, that was Nolan saying, you know, if you ever want to give me a call for the Bond, I will knock it out of the park. And then you've got the fourth dream level, which is DiCaprio down in limbo.
Yeah.
And all these things are happening simultaneously. All these really tense things. If just one of those levels was the film, incredible tension. Yeah. But the fact there's four levels of tension. In the first level in Los Angeles, you've got the van that's just crashed over the barrier dropping down towards the sea.
Slowest motion, ready for the kick.
That 3 second drop or whatever is an hour of the film and you keep cutting back to it. In the second level, you've got Joseph Gordon-Levitt floating because there's no gravity and he's trying to wrap all these people together and put them in the lift. And then in the third level, you've got them holding off the guys on skidoos with guns. In the fourth level, you've got DiCaprio trying to find his wife. It's just, it's relentless. It's non-stop. And all of it is brilliant.
And you have to give it 100% of your attention constantly.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Consistently and constantly for the whole hour, because I don't care what you say. It's not, I'll be back in a minute, I'm just going to get a drink.
No. There are no toilet breaks on this.
You'd be shit out of luck.
You piss your pants. That's it. You stay exactly where you are.
You will sit in your filth and you will enjoy this.
In the cinema, this was tense. I remember sitting there and everyone was on the edge of their seat and it's an hour and you're breathing. Like, God.
And you know what? We've not even touched on the big debate about Inception. Did he or did he not remain in the dream world?
Now,
Ben's going to have researched
this. Here we go.
He's been on the Lost
Forum. Of course
they
have. So, at the end of the film, you see DiCaprio twist the little totem, which is a little spinning top. Mm-hmm. And the rule with this particular totem is that if you're in a dream world, it doesn't stop spinning. At the end of the film, you see the top spin and then it kind of starts to wobble and then boom, cuts to black. Yeah. So you're thinking, did it stop or did it not? Was he in the dream? Was he not? None of that is relevant. None of that's important because the totem does not belong to him. That's not DiCaprio. That's not Dom's totem. That's Mal. That's his dead wife. His totem, and you may or may not know this, but his totem is his wedding ring. If you watch that film, he only wears his wedding ring on his left ring finger during the scenes when he's in the dream. Right. When he's out of the dream, he has no ring on his hand. So in that, or in the lead up to that final scene where you see him land at the airport and he hands his passport to the check-in guy, no ring on his finger. There is your incontrovertible truth, proof rather, that he is in fact back in the real world. All that said, Nolan's view on it is, it doesn't matter. The point of it is, when he starts spinning the top at the end, instead of staying to watch it, he doesn't. He turns his back and he goes to see his kids. The point is, Dom no longer cares whether it's dream or reality. He apologised to Mal. He said it was my fault. You know, the fact that you died was all down to me because I'd incepted you, blah, 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 blah. He relieved himself of his guilt and he was now in a position where he could go and look at his kids and he didn't even bother to turn around to see if the top stopped spinning because he'd moved on. And that's what's more important than whether he was in a dream or a reality.
All I can say right now is Gemma's going to be going home tonight. I'm going to be going home tonight. We're going to be watching it again, seeing who's the producer, the editor, the director, which scene he's got a wedding ring on.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's the cinematographer? This is mind-blowing.
Wow.
It reminds me of when we talked about Donnie Darko, that you need to watch it. And we have, between us, I reckon, seen Inception 20 times. Ooh, between us.
If that, yeah.
And there will be another 5 viewings, another 10 viewings, another 20 viewings, because you see something else. What I love about Inception, right, is no two people you ever meet will have exactly the same opinion on what happened, what it's all about. I remember so many thick twats that I work with coming around to me and saying they left the cinema because they just thought it was shit or I didn't know what was going on. And what's all that spinning top all about? That's bollocks.
Probably too busy, like, you know, watching Judge Reinder or something.
Invariably, anyone I've ever come across that doesn't like this film, it's because they say, oh, it didn't make sense. You don't make sense, mate. It makes perfect sense if you're not a thick twat, as Mark says, or if you just weren't paying attention. That's all it comes down to. If you were actually keeping your eyes focused and not, you know, pissing your pants and whatever, if you were actually caring about what was happening, it makes perfect sense. Yes, it's difficult. Yes, it's tricky. Yes, there are some sort of grey areas of logic because it's a goddamn sci-fi film about incepting dreams. Of course there's going to be grey areas of logic. But if you were focusing, it makes perfect sense. And if you don't think it did, then you're a fucking moron.
Unlike Paprika, because I had no idea. What's I'm having to get out of prison card.
As we've said, that is the design of Paprika. Yes. It's meant to be trippy and weird and illogical, whereas Inception has an innate logic to it. You just have to be focusing to see it.
Yes.
Put that phone away. Don't tweet.
Yes.
And watch it. If you're listening, you've never seen either. Yeah. Please. Yeah. Comment, send us messages, email us.
Brush off your other half. Like, they can give you a hickey another day. You got to stick with Inception.
And I'll tell you, one of the great things for understanding Inception is the use of the character Ariadne, played by Ellen Page. She in this film is the audience surrogate. She basically plays us in the sense that because she's new to this whole idea of extraction and Inception, she's new to this whole team of thieves. They have to explain the rules of dreaming and dream creation to her. So they're not just explaining it to her, they're explaining it to us.
Which is Andy.
It's our way of seeing the world. So that was a great bit of writing by Nolan, putting her in that way.
Was it him and his brother that wrote this together?
I think it's just Christopher, this one.
God, he's talented, isn't he? Christ. Oh, God. Is he sort of our similar age? Or is
no,
he...
he's in his 40s. Yeah.
Thank God. Oh, that's okay. I was about to kick off then.
That would be very depressing.
But if you want to be really depressed, Damien Chazelle is 31 or 32.
Yeah. He's younger than us.
And he's about, he's probably going to win his first Oscar as well.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So,
wow.
One thing I want to say, and you know, a lot of people talk about Leonardo DiCaprio. Mm. The moment of Titanic is that people will remember him forever for playing Jack. And, you know, not a great film, but he did a good performance. It took him to the next level. Mm-hmm. He's, like we said earlier, for being the poster boy.
Yeah.
Without doubt, well, I don't think we've ever picked him out of the hat or the dub. Without doubt, I think his finest ever performance, not as a personal touch of favourite, but no one has given an acting performance like that ever. Yeah. That he does in Inception.
Just his always, it's, the interactions he has with Mal, it's heartbreaking.
But in a weird way, and I know it sounds absolutely ridiculous after I've just said this, it's also one of the most unrecognised performances because people never talk about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
No. Because everything else is there. Yeah. You've got Tom Hardy, you've got Mary, what's her name?
Marianne Cotillard.
I'm never going to try and pronounce that. But you've got so much going on, but you need to study that whole film and just watch him because he gives a performance that is Oscar worthy.
Absolutely.
Anytime he's interacting with Marianne Cotillard as well, that's for me alone, that's worth its weight in gold as well. You could, of course, you should watch the whole entire film, but if you want to watch it from an acting perspective, just watch him and Marianne Cotillard together. That's so much chemistry. Oh, just bubbling.
Leonardo DiCaprio and Nolan together.
It's a match made in heaven.
Isn't it?
Spaffing.
It
if
is,
you
though,
will.
Isn't it?
Yes, they're fantastic.
That's the dream.
I do want to give a bit of credit to Tom Hardy and to Joseph Gordon-Levitt. They are great individually, but even better together.
Yes.
The relationship between those two characters, the way they just snipe at each other, even when Arthur is trying to give Ames a compliment, Ames is like, well, thank you for your patronising attitude. They're just always little snipes and jabs, and I love them. I want to see those two work together again.
He calls him darling at one point, didn't he?
That quote.
You need to dream a little bigger, darling.
In the most weirdest Cockney accent.
Yeah.
Amazing. Absolutely awesome.
Ooh, I'm spent. I'm exhausted.
I've absolutely enjoyed talking about this.
Watching Paprika knackered me out, mate.
Let's wrap this bitch up, shall we?
Let's score Paprika first.
Yes.
Okay.
Mark, I want to hear your score first.
At this moment in time, because I am still so bedazzled by it. There you go. That's the word I'm going to use.
Bedazzled.
That's fair, isn't it?
Darling.
Fine.
It's going to be a 7.
Yeah.
Because this will be a film that we'll talk about again in a few years, and I don't care. It will grow in time. Mm-hmm. And this is my first ever viewing, and I felt like it was like a video game trailer. All these colours, and I was like, what the hell? But now Ben's talked. Gemma, you've spoke about it. I'll watch it again and it will easily be an 8 or 9. It's a masterpiece, but it's a 7 for a first ever watch.
That's
fair
more
enough.
Than all right.
Gemma.
I'm going to take this to an 8 out of 10 for me. It's just, it is a film that I would encourage to watch again and again as well. It's absolutely stunning. It really is. And it's a film that I do believe is going to stand the test of time as well. So a very lovely, solid 8.
It's an 8 for me as well. I think it's a fantastic anime film. I think it's up there, probably in my top 10 anime films of all time.
Yeah.
I think the direction's beautiful, the animation is flawless, and it's just full of interesting ideas which only get deeper the more you watch it. So it's an 8 for me. So I think fair enough we say 8 out of 10 overall.
That.
Yeah, happy with that?
Very.
Let's talk Inception. Gemma, I'll go to you first. Gemma, thoughts?
Okay, this is one of the greatest films of all time, I believe, and so I'm very happy to give it a strong, high 9 out of 10.
Okie doke.
This is my favourite filmmaker's film. It is my favourite ever cinematography film. It's my go-to film. Leonardo DiCaprio's best performance, 10 out of 10.
Wow.
It shits over everything. It's Nolan's best film and Nolan's my man. If I have a child, it's going to be called Nolan. I'm serious. We talked about this.
I know somebody who has a kid called Nolan as well. So.
Good.
Yes, 10 out of 10. It's a goddamn no-fooling masterpiece. It's one of the best films ever made. It's one of those that's always knocking on the door to my top 5. And I think next time we do our top 5 come Christmas, it might be in again. Because watching it this past week, it's the first time I've watched it in maybe 2 years. And goddamn, I forgot how much I loved it. I was watching it because when you just watch films when you don't do a podcast, you don't think overly critically. I was watching this film with a critical eye, trying to think of things that I could discuss. And everything I came up with was entirely positive. I can't find a fault in this damn film because there isn't one. It's a masterpiece, 10 out of 10. So overall, Inception, 10 out of 10.
Wow. That's a great score.
What's up there with La La Land?
Yeah.
No.
That was bloody brilliant, guys. Mm. And you know what? Thank you so much for doing something completely different.
Oh, you're welcome.
Friggin' enjoyed that.
I'm not going to do that for my next rewatch. Sure. No, we're going back to the old days.
We'll save that. We might do it again in future, but let's leave it a while.
E.T. and Mac and Me. I'm going to pick just one film. Uh-huh. Back to the old days. So in 1975, Steven Spielberg gave us a film that was the first ever summer blockbuster involving a killer shark. Have you heard of it?
I might be wearing it right now.
What intrigues me is how he followed up that masterpiece.
Oh, God.
So he brought Jaws out, which the world went crazy for. After that, in 1977, he brought a film out that he actually wrote as well.
Oh.
Some people have said this is one of the greatest sci-fi films of all time. So on the next episode, we are going to be watching Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Heck to the yes. Fantastic.
And I have never seen it.
And it's the ultimate of all Marmite films. Literally.
Really?
You read the reviews. One star, 10 star, 1 star, 10 star.
Wow.
I can't wait, Ben. You are going to... Well, stay tuned. And find out. So, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
List and shout, list and shout. Yeah?
Come on, come on.
baby now.
All right, so this is our new quiz, List and Shout, and this is how it works. We're going to take it in turns, each of our two competitors here, and I will give you a list which has 20 answers, 20 film-related answers. You then have 90 seconds to give me as many of those answers as you can. You're going to get two of these lists each. Whoever has the highest cumulative score at the end of two rounds each wins this round.
You just said then you've got two contestants. You've got one contestant and one champion.
Oh my God.
At this moment in time, I am the undisputed 2017 champion. You're lucky to be in the same room as me right now.
Give it up.
Now,
as I'm shitting myself.
As this week's presenter, I really shouldn't take sides, but I really want you to win, Gemma.
Let's do this.
What's that piece of paper
you've just handed her?
It's nothing. Just don't look this way.
Are we all happy with how this works?
Yeah.
90 seconds. I'm going to be shitting myself as a countdown, I take it.
I've got an alarm on my phone here that's going to beep loudly.
Oh my God, this is
the only one question I've got. You know, if it beeps and I'm halfway through, do I get to answer? I love that on TV shows. Can I answer?
Yeah, you've started so you can finish. That's absolutely fine. And there's no wrong, well, there are wrong answers, but you can't lose a point or anything. Just shout out as many answers. If you get it right, I will tick them off as I go along. What we're going to do, though, so that I can't be accused of favouritism, of giving, for example, Gemma an easier topic than Mark, I've put all four of the topics in a pot in front of us.
Ooh.
We're going to take it in turns, or you two are going to take it in turns to pull out a topic. However, you're not going to pull out your own so that you can have a sneaky little look at it for 5 minutes before you read it out. You're going to pull out the topic, read it out for the other person. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No betting or fixing here.
No, none whatsoever. This is not FIFA. Mark, I want Gemma to go first. That means you're going to pick out the first thing for her. Read it as best you can.
So, Gemma.
Okay.
God.
Don't say that. Do you know how to read
it? Do you not read my handwriting?
If you can see him now.
It's not that hard.
Your topic is The Guardians' top 20 best gangster movies.
So that is The Guardians' top 20 gangster movies of all time. And your time starts now.
Goodfellas, Casino.
Yes, they're both in there, Goodfellas and Casino.
Okay, Godfather 1, Godfather Part 2, Godfather Part 3.
No.
Oh. The Departed.
Every time you say no. Point
on. Oh, come on. Gangs of New York.
No.
God, that's so fucking hard. It's my topic next week as well. It's embarrassing.
You've got four so far, four of 20.
God. Thinking of every Scorsese film right now.
There are other
Once Upon a Time in New York.
Correct. No. Sorry.
Is that not in?
No.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. My mind's gone blank. Shit.
Mark, this is going to be easy for you, mate. This is weak sauce.
Don't say that.
Honestly, you can't think of any gangster
films.
No,
because you try...
Any gangster films.
Fuck off.
Any gangster film.
30 seconds.
Miller's Crossing.
Correct.
That's a great one.
The Untouchables.
Correct.
God. Gangster Squad.
No.
Donnie Brasco.
Yes.
Oh my God, Al Pacino. What's he been in? Scarface?
Yes.
Only the biggest one ever, what?
Middle finger to you.
How long's left, Ben?
5 seconds.
That is so hard. Fuck. Oh,
that is time up.
That's so hard. My mind literally just went blank. So I'm definitely stumped.
So you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 out of 20.
Really hard.
It's not bad. The ones that you didn't get were The Big Heat, Bonnie and Clyde, The French Connection, Little Caesar, Mean Streets, Once Upon a Time in America. You said Once Upon a Time in New
York.
Did
I? Oh, no.
Yeah. The Public Enemy, Pulp Fiction is on there.
Oh, shit.
Road to Perdition, True Romance and White Heat.
Do you want, I'll be honest, I don't think I would have got the majority of those.
You did all right. I think eight's pretty acceptable. Eight's not too bad.
That's oh, the tensity.
I thought you shit the bed about 28 seconds to go.
She pulled it round. Mm. She pulled it round, though. She was really weak at the start.
I was.
Did all right.
Thank you.
Okay, then.
My turn, I believe.
Yep, Gemma, pick it out.
Okay. Let's go for this one.
For the listeners, I've just taken off my jumper and my scarf, and I'm sat here in a T-shirt because I'm nervous.
Right. For Mark, GamesRadar's 20 Best War Movies.
So, GamesRadar's 20 Best War Movies of all time, and your time starts now.
Hamburger Hill.
No.
What?
Don't argue with each one. You haven't got the time.
Saving Private Ryan.
Yes.
Wind Talkers.
No.
What? I'm just going to be arguing.
Stop arguing.
Okay, war films. Apocalypse Now.
Yes.
Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Yes.
War films. Gemma, help me.
All you did was mock me.
1 minute left.
What? Already? Okay, war films.
It's hard, isn't it?
It is really hard. My mind's gone absolutely blank. Bloody hell, I actually have gone completely blank.
Right?
This is horrible. This is the worst game
you've
show ever.
You've got three.
War of the Worlds.
No.
Jesus, this is horrible. I'm just trying to think of tanks and stuff like that.
Just think of films.
Three Kings.
No.
That's not in the war films.
No.
Okay.
30 seconds.
Oh, shit. How many have I got?
Three.
Oh, fuck me. I thought I'd do badly. Gemma, you told me, fuck me, fuck you.
Not so easy, is it?
No, it's absolutely horrible. How long have I got left?
11 seconds.
Oh my God, I can't just have three war films of all time, which is absolutely shocking.
We did a topic on it a few weeks ago.
That and your terrible. Time is up. That, my friend, was a shit show. You got three. You got Apocalypse Now, Bridge on the River Kwai, and Saving Private Ryan. The ones you didn't get were All Quiet on the Western Front, Casablanca, Come and See. That film left me cold. Das Boot, Deer Hunter, Downfall, Full Metal Jacket, bro. Yeah. That was in your top three. Yeah. La Grande Illusion, The Great Escape, Inglourious Bastards was in your top three as well. Paths of Glory, The Pianist, Platoon, Salvador, Schindler's List, Spartacus, and The Thin Red Line.
They've not seen a beating like that since Fight Club.
Or since I thrashed you last month. Mm. Anyway.
Bearing in mind, we're only halfway though, kids. You've got two more rounds to play, yeah?
She got eight.
She got eight, so yeah. It's gonna take an almighty Rocky-style comeback.
Oh my God.
Mark, it's your turn to pick one out of the pot for Gemma.
Okay. This is going to be easier.
Okay.
Last 20 different best actor Oscar winners.
Okay.
So that's the last 20 different Best Actor Oscar winners.
Okay.
And your time starts now.
Eddie Redmayne.
Correct.
Denzel Washington.
Correct.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
No.
Tom Cruise. Russell Crowe.
Tom Cruise, no. Russell Crowe, yes.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yes.
This is tough. This is really tough.
Robert De Niro.
No. 1 minute left.
Okay. Ray Liotta.
No. I don't think he's ever won an Oscar. He should. He's amazing, but no.
He should.
54 seconds.
Okay. Matt Damon.
No.
Ben Affleck.
No.
Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
What did he win for?
Leaving Las Vegas. Mm-hmm.
Nice. See, I'm distracting her time.
Stop it.
Was that a good film, Gemma? What did you think of Leaving Las Vegas?
Ignore him, Gemma. 38 seconds.
Lawrence Fishburne.
No.
Keanu Reeves.
No.
Tommy Wiseau. Give me a hand here. I'm just throwing
out names.
You're
doing really good. Yeah. You're doing really well.
Okay, Ryan Gosling.
No.
That's this year.
Yeah.
Ciarán McCallum.
No.
Gemma, where did you
Patrick
get your t-shirt
Stewart.
From?
No. No.
Jeff Bridges.
Yes. You got 10 seconds.
Okay. Ben Foster. No, you never won an Oscar.
No.
Should have.
J.K. Simmons.
No,
you're supporting.
Oh, and your time is up. Do you know, that wasn't too bad, Gemma. You've scored 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. A creditable 7 out of 10.
Okay.
The ones that you didn't get were Adrian Brody, Colin Firth, Forrest Whitaker, Jeffrey Rush, Jack Nicholson, Jamie Foxx, Jean Dujardin, Kevin Spacey, Matthew McConaughey, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Roberto Benigni, Sean Penn, and Tom Hanks.
It's so easy when you hear the results.
Indeed it is, yeah.
So Gemma's on 8 and 7, so it's 15.
Yes, and you're on 3.
So all I need to do is get 13.
You need 13 to win, yeah.
Oh, God.
It's a unlucky tough, it's for a some, tough ask. But it could be lucky for me.
Correct.
Shall we find out what your subject is?
I want the listeners to come and sit here one day. This is horrible.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So your topic is the last 20 different Best Actress Oscar winners.
The last 20 different Best Actress Oscar winners. And your time starts now.
Julia Roberts.
Yes.
Juliette Moore.
Julianne Moore. I'll give you that.
Please. Well, yeah, the names can't be one here that's going to be like that.
Yeah.
Leanne?
Yes, I'm having it.
Is there a famous Leanne?
Your time's wasting with this nonsense.
Okay, so we've got actresses.
We do. A lot of them.
Stop putting me off. Uma Thurman.
No.
Audrey Hepburn.
In the last 20 years, you fucking mental case.
Christ.
Sigourney Weaver.
No.
Natalie Portman.
Yes.
Emma Stone.
Not yet.
Possibly.
How long's left?
45
halfway
seconds.
There. Okay, so I need to get back number 10.
Come on.
Bloody hell.
Name some actresses, man.
No, but I'm thinking of lead ones.
Well, just any, just really.
Name some.
No, because I'll go.
30 seconds.
I've shit the bed. This is absolutely disaster again. I'm going to go with. I can't think of a name that's the lead role in the new Star Wars film. Her name is Felicity.
No.
Okay,
this is champion talk as
this
well.
Is dog shit talk.
Helen Mirren.
Yes.
Is it going to claw her back?
No, I'm trying to think of the one that wins fucking everything.
An actress, preferably.
I fucked the bed. I've got 5 seconds left.
No, I fucked the bed. One.
Shit the bed.
That was, sorry, dude, but that was a fucking horror show.
Don't worry, you're playing next week. We'll see how you get on.
You're going to bury me now, aren't you?
Top 20 dogs.
Top 20 cameos
Marley.
In Kevin Smith films.
Yeah.
So you scored there, Mark, 4. You got Helen Mirren, Julianne Moore, Julia Roberts, Natalie Portman for 4. Added to your 3 from the previous round
7.
Is 7 out of 40.
Not bad.
Not good.
Well, not great.
No.
Whereas Pooch scored 15. Just so you know, the ones that you missed were Brie Larson, Kate Blanchett, Charlize Theron, Frances McDormand, Gwyneth Paltrow, Halle Berry, Helen Hunt, Hilary Swank, Jennifer Lawrence, Kate Winslet, Marion Cotillard, Meryl Streep.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. No, there's one everything, because she'd won about 100 of them.
Nicole Kidman, Reese Witherspoon, Sandra Bullock, and Susan Sarandon.
It's all good. Let me read them out.
Yeah, no.
Gemma, I know you can glorify that you've just thrashed me, but that was horrible.
15
that was,
to 7
yeah.
is a right royal bumming.
That is... That is one of the toughest games I think we've ever done.
Yeah,
here.
It's tough. Because you're on the spot. It's very, very hard.
But bloody hell, that were good.
I'm going to go home and revise every topic ever. So, Gemma, do you want to be the games master next
Hell
time?
Hell yes, I want to be the games master. I do not want to be perspiring a lot.
Perspiring?
Perspiring, sweaty.
Aspiring is the word? Okay.
Right. So I don't want to be a sweaty woman.
Ben's going to get to sit here next week and have a taste of it.
Yes, and then play a quiz.
So, yeah, stick around for List and Shout again in 2 weeks. We're almost at the end, so let's do, as we always do, some nice old listener questions. Michael Hamilton has said, have you heard the news that Ben Affleck has ruled himself out of directing the new Batman movie?
Yeah.
This week, yes.
Who would you like to replace him as director? as it stands?
It's a tough question, because part of me wants to say Zack Snyder, because he's already created that world and it would make it more of a piece. But then on the other hand, people absolutely hate what he's done. I don't hate what he's done, but a lot of people do. So I don't think anyone would be particularly happy with that.
Mm. Damien Chazelle?
A musical Batman. Yeah,
that's right.
I've been reading a lot of comments on comicbook.com. Loads and loads of people are contributing, and there's no... Ben's instant reaction is going to be laughing, but people have said Kevin Smith.
I know,
because
I've heard that, yeah.
He's got a talent of comic book love, writing, yeah. Directing when he's with the right team of people. I know it would be too much of a jump to do that, but he isn't, in my mind, completely ruled out, because if he had the right team of people, if he worked with co-directing with Affleck and he was doing all the duties for him.
The problem is, and you know, there are times when I've ripped into Smith on this podcast many, many times, and I mainly do it just to wind you up, Mark, but absolute truth, no jokes aside, he's just not a very good director. And I'm not talking about, oh, he's not using a good script, blah, blah, blah. He's actual, the nuts and bolts of direction, you know, framing your shots, what they actually look like, he's shit at it, because he's never learned it. He's a guy who picked up a Super 8 camera when he was a kid or whatever and has just done low budget shit ever since then. He doesn't know the nuts and bolts of direction. So to put a big blockbuster like that on him, it'd be awful. It would be really bad.
Didn't he do a Supergirl episode?
He's doing, yeah, he's
done a Supergirl, and they're fine, but that's TV direction, which is low end stuff anyway. Yeah. To do a Hollywood $200 million blockbuster, he's not talented enough.
No. But the problem at the moment is there's not many people that could do justice to that film.
Mm.
And there isn't. And that is actually bad. And I don't want anyone like Michael Bay getting anywhere near it.
God,
or anything
no,
like that.
God,
and I don't
no.
really want Schneider on it. I don't. I want him to have a break away from ruining a lot.
One person who's been mentioned is George Miller.
Oh, so that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And I think he's still got it.
Well, Mad Max proved it, yeah.
Yeah.
So at the moment, we don't really know.
Nah.
Sorry, dude. Damien Bullock has said, this is quite relevant to what we've just talked about. Do you think Hollywood should make an Attack on Titan live action movie? Or do you think we should stop trying to make these live action movies based on anime?
The latter, yeah.
Yep.
The animated series exists and is good. There are Japanese live action versions of it, which are shit. So we don't need an even more diluted American version. Let it be.
Yeah.
You're not a fan?
Not really, no. I think with previous examples such as Aeon Flux or like things like that, it's not really related very well on the big screen, so no, just let it be.
Ghost in the Shell will be the time that we really see in a few months. I think we get a new Super Bowl trailer this weekend and all this, so we will see, but that's going to be the one that will either annoyingly open the gates to loads of them, or we'll realise it doesn't work, it'll flop. And we just will leave it alone as it should be.
As long as they leave Cowboy Bebop alone, I'll be
We could have Paprika. We could have that.
Paprika would be all right.
You know what I mean?
Paprika, the options for that, for an American remake, were bought by the director Wolfgang Peterson. And he was in 2010, he bought the rights to it. But then Inception came out that year and he abandoned it because he was like, well, it's too similar, so what's the point?
Yeah.
Lee Morgan has said, have you heard that Daniel Day-Lewis will be working again with Paul Thomas Anderson? But do you actually give a rat's ass about a movie that's all about the fashion industry, which is what it's going to be?
Well, what's the story?
That's all they've really said at the moment.
That
partnership we know works.
Mm.
And I know the subject matter isn't what, oh, great. Mm. But I don't care when it's in those guys' hands.
Yeah, and Devil Wears Prada is a good fashion film.
Yeah, but so Zoolander. You know what I mean?
For the first one, yeah.
Just because that's the industry is set in doesn't tell you anything. If someone would have said to you that Paul Thomas Anderson and Daniel Day-Lewis are doing a film about an oil man 100 years ago, does that sound something you'd be into? Not really. But There Will Be Blood is a masterpiece.
Yeah, so rightfully so.
I will hold my opinion until I see the film.
Mm-hmm.
This could be a very quick answer from Fireball Darren. Are you actually now starting to yawn more than ever about the fact we're getting Avatar 2, 3, 4 and 5 is officially greenlit and happening?
Yawn, I'm practically falling asleep.
I couldn't give a shiny shit. I've not seen the first one and I never will.
Lucky.
I just don't know why he's left it so late. If it was such, was it the most successful film after Titanic? Was it beat
was.
It?
At that point in time, yeah, it was.
It's because it was new to the whole 3D thing. So they had the elevated 3D prices. People flocked to it because it was a novelty, and he's re-released it since. So they're the reasons why it's the most successful, not because it's any good.
Nice. Barry Davis, we've had this question before, but not with Gemma. What prop would you steal from a movie that you could keep forever?
Oh my God.
I think I know what Ben's is. I know, it might have changed. Who knows?
I can't remember what I said last time.
I think you might have said... I don't know, actually. I think you might... Lightsaber, did you want to... I don't
Possibly.
Know, actually. I don't know.
I know what it would be now. It would be the Frank the Bunny suit from Donnie Darko.
Oh, that's great.
I would like the bike off E.T. just because it's so iconic. It's just that bike from the 80s. That would be so cool. Or the Back to the Future DeLorean. Mm-hmm. That's not really a prop. I'm taking a vehicle. Maybe his... Just something, you know, like from the original cat clock on the wall or something from Back to the Future or the clock tower, the actual... Oh, that'd be beautiful.
Me, the flux capacitor.
Give me the hoverboard any day of the week. Or ride into those bad boys with, like, Into Work or something. That'd be ace.
Anything from Jaws. That would be cool. Like, the actual ones that they film through when they're going through the... Oh.
Or one of the eggs from Alien.
Yes! Give me a face hugger.
Be unbelievable. Question for just me and Ben. I like this.
Good.
Standard.
Al_Rob_MN. If you and Ben were like the Step Brothers in Step Brothers, who would get the top bunk? Do you piss the bed?
I don't.
When was the last time you pissed the bed?
When was the last time I was blackout drunk? I have pissed the bed once in my life, and that's as much of the story I'm ever going to tell you.
And you know I've shit the bed. So.
Yeah.
What would you rather have, piss or shit?
So, yes, generally I would want the bottom bunk because I'm a lazy man. I don't see the point in climbing higher than I need to. But if you're going to be defecating, I'd rather be above it than below it, so I'll have the top.
So many things. So many adventures.
How many activities?
So many activities. Activities. Bash2110 has said they've recently watched Hail Caesar. It's technically a beautiful film, but boring as hell.
Yes.
Do you think there's many other films that are like this? They get that big hype, but they just don't really work.
I think there are a lot of films like that, especially big-name directors. So the Coens, they do make beautiful-looking films. They're never anything less than technically flawless. But sometimes they make duds. Things like The Lady Killers and what was the one with George Clooney and Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Intolerable Cruelty.
Oh, so they do that. And Scorsese is the same. He makes technically flawless films all the time, but he also makes pieces of boring shit like Bringing Out the Dead and Silence.
I watched Silence so boring. There's a lot, isn't there? Yeah. We sympathy for you.
Yeah, for me, Gangs of New York.
How dare you?
Are you serious?
It's not for me. Sorry, guys. But it's my opinion.
That is a very interesting way to hand your resignation in.
L. Wells film.
Oh, is that Lyndon?
It's Lyndon.
Oh, okay. He's alive to me now.
He's finished 6 weeks annual leave. Paternity leave. 6 weeks. Fair play.
Bloody hell.
What film should he watch the night before he goes back to work?
Office Space.
I think Ferris Bueller, because that would give you the incentive to have more time off. Or something. What's a film like Days Confused where they have the whole summer off and that's much you have that equates.
Or even the newer one, Everybody Wants Some.
Amazing movie.
Great film.
Unbelievable. You got anything?
You just need to watch something fun. He's a doctor, isn't he? So stay away from anything that's around medical malpractice.
Just something fun.
Watch Dumb and Dumber.
Oh.
Yeah. Something nice.
Yeah.
Let us know what you did watch. That'd be interesting. Movie Geekcast. Super Bowl weekend, guys. Woohoo! Yes, it is. It is. That's letting people know when we're recording.
Indeed.
It's tonight.
Yeah. I'm sat here in my Seahawks jersey, who are not in the Super Bowl, sadly.
What are your thoughts on American football films? Have you got any favourites?
I do. It's only because I loved it when I was a kid. It's a film called Little Giants. And it has Devon Sawa from Final Destination in. And I bloody loved it as a kid. And it's just about a peewee football team, like a ragtag kind of muffin kind of group. And they have to play a football game against a professional kids football team. And it's just a heck of a lot of fun. So Little Giants for me.
The Waterboy. This is when Sandler made terrible films, but no one pretended they were anything but. They were just terrible but fun, and you know, you don't have to worry about it. He's not making a ridiculous amount of money off it. Waterboy's great fun, and Big Show's in it. What more can you want?
The Last Boy Scout. That was a good film. I think that was a really bloody good film on any given Sunday.
Yeah.
There's not many.
There isn't, is
there? I didn't like Concussion.
No.
I didn't like Concussion. Gridiron Gang is wank.
Varsity Blues as well.
Yeah.
What's that one about? The Blind Side. Terrible.
Yeah.
Mm. Wank. Flix Watcher Podcast. Do you have any childhood favourite films that you won't go back and watch because you knew actually deep down they were shite?
Yeah. The Never Ending Story. That's not a good film, is it? But I used to love that as a kid.
Grease 2. But I do actually still love it, so I can't really give that as an answer. But Honey, it is shit.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. It was on telly the other day. It looks so dated and so shit. But when I was a kid, I believed that the chairs were that big. And it was just all done in a studio.
Or they have like that massive cookie with the cream in it.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, that
and I
like,
watch
thing.
It now, it would be wank.
It would be.
So I'm swearing quite a lot.
You are. On the Lego this Batman is, movie this episode.
This is wankcast. We've said the word wank about 14 times.
Basement condition. What would you each like as a superhero franchise now being brought as a live-action TV series? Ben, I know you're a big fan of a lot of good comics. And
Green Lantern.
Ooh.
Green Lantern has been massively underserved by TV and film. Ooh. The Green Lantern film with Ryan Reynolds was a piece of steaming dog shit. And he's not been introduced into the DC realm of films. The Greg Berlanti shows on CW, you know, you've got your Supergirl and your Flash and Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. Where's Green Lantern? One of the best characters in that universe. Nor is Green Lantern being talked about for being brought into the DC EU film universe yet. You know, you've got the Flash film lined up, etc. There's no Green Lantern on the slate. Get the Green Lantern involved.
I loved the Spawn series, the cartoon series. I would love to see that continued because it was kind of cut quite quickly. But if maybe they could reinvent that, but in animation form. I don't think this should be done in live action.
There is talk. Todd McFarlane has been talking for years about doing either a sequel or reboot to the Spawn film, which I would love him to do.
Yeah.
I know objectively it's not a great film, but I bloody love it.
I do. I would like to see that again because that the animated series was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm.
Who spiked the puns? You have 30 seconds to pitch me your reboot idea for a classic Arnie movie. Who's your star?
Well, it has to be The Rock, because The Rock is the modern Arnie, isn't he?
And that's going
to
happen.
He's the go-to action guy.
Who would we watch?
Commando.
Commando. Yes, that's what I see. The poster already. It doesn't need to be much different. Just change the head.
And the thing is, when you say you've got 30 seconds, Hollywood doesn't need 30 seconds. A producer doesn't need 30 seconds to pitch a Rock film. You just say, so this is what happens, and The Rock's in it. Sold.
Yeah.
That's it now. That's what happens in Hollywood. That's why he's in every other film.
Rain Wilson in The Running Man, because he could kill a bear with his own hands. He wouldn't be like, you know, he'd just get shit done. So Rain Wilson as Dwight.
I thought you meant Rebel Wilson. The running woman.
She needs to.
She wouldn't run. She wouldn't run.
I can't stop it. I'm just going to move on. That's absolutely perfect. More goodier than have said, if you could have one actor, actress magically rise from their dead and continue their career at their prime, who would you choose?
Alan Rickman, because I miss him so much.
Mm. And what do you believe is his prime?
Oh my God.
Dogma.
No, don't laugh.
He is good in Dogma.
He is great in Dogma.
Die Hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is his
the
prime.
Hans Gruber phase. Or recently John Hurt, because he's one of the greatest actors of all time.
When I heard that John Hurt died, the first thing I did was watch Snowpiercer.
Oh,
amazing film.
Such a great film.
That needs to be a rewatch.
It does need
big
to.
Big time.
I'm going to say it's the most obvious one ever, but I just want to see Heath Ledger continue. I want to see when he died in Dark Knight, in real life, and he was filming Dark Knight, you knew that he would be going on to the biggest things ever. I wanted to see him collect that Oscar. I wanted to see him...
Yeah.
Be in Dark Knight Rises, which Nolan said he had him ready for.
Mm-hmm. There was
I'm
so much,
gutted.
So much promise with his career.
Absolutely gutted. Mm.
I'd go with Philip Seymour Hoffman. Oh. And you say, you know, have him back in his prime. He died in his prime. He was, what, early 40s or something?
Yeah.
That is sad.
Big time.
We're not doing lists
really
of questions
bummed out
anymore.
Now.
The very final question. Jay's lost the word. With Valentine's Day coming up, just round the corner, and love is in the air. What is your favourite breakup movie?
The Breakup? That's what I can think of.
500 Days of Summer. Oh. No couple should ever have to watch that who's very happy with each other.
Mine's going to be High Fidelity.
Ah,
that's a great film.
Brilliant film.
Absolutely stunning film.
It is a great film.
That's probably it, isn't it? I think there's not many breakup films. No. The Breakup's pretty
great. Her's not really breakup, but it's...
Hers a film that will make you break up. Please keep your questions coming. The best way to contact us is go on skiptotheend.co.uk. On there, there's links to Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, email. And we're getting questions for all of them, so just keep them coming and we'll answer them all again in 2 weeks' time.
And that brings us to the end of another Skip to the End podcast. I want to keep the outro short and sweet because it is Super Bowl this evening, and I want to get good and boozed up on this brother's cider right here.
That's short and sweet.
Indeed. Yes. Too short. I wish it went on forever.
Hopefully, yeah? If they send more crates. Yes,
maybe it will.
It's been a good catalyst to the episode, hasn't it? So thank you, brothers.
I still
thank
one
you.
Of these. Let's have a little clink.
Yeah.
Clinky clink.
Brilliant.
Clink.
Thank you, brothers. That's thank honestly, you brothers. Like, we don't do shameful plugging. You hear that much. Here. But it's really nice that you've acknowledged us. Mm-hmm. You sent us stuff after about a month. Strongbow, you're arseholes.
Dead to us.
If you listen to us and you're drinking Strongbow, bin it.
Yeah.
Bye, brothers.
Tastes like piss anyway.
It does. It's shit. Brothers is what... I've missed out all my life on having brothers. I now know what it feels like.
Exactly.
Fantastic stuff. What have we got coming up on the next episode? Whose rewatch was it?
It was mine. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Mm-hmm. I can hear people now. I can hear them screaming in the streets. Wow, they've finally done it. Spielberg's first written movie. Brilliant. Can't wait. Absolutely.
It's going to be fantastic. Brilliant. I've never seen it. It's one of those, actually, that I've been flicking through the TV and it's been on many, many times and I've never actually just sat there and decided to watch it. I've always kind of flicked past it on a Sunday night. So now I've got a reason to sit and watch it. I look forward to it.
The time is now.
Indeed it is. Gemma, what is our topic?
It's going to be our top three gangster films.
Which, it's interesting that you picked that, seeing as you... did pretty poorly on picking out gangster films in the quiz there.
I embarrassed myself tremendously, didn't I?
Yeah, not as much as Mark embarrassed himself. Yeah. So you're absolutely fine.
Quote-unquote champion. Is that what champion sounds
like? I could still
like?
Win this. Remember that. Well, if I thrash Ben.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could, mm-hmm. but you couldn't.
Remains to be seen. Find out in 2 weeks' time. And we're going to be mass debating over Keanu Reeves.
Right?
So much to choose from.
Yeah, do we go with oak or pine or what variety of wood has he given us
mahogany.
Over the years?
If you would like to contribute, come on our social media and let us know because we'll read them out. You know, we want to know what your personal mm-hmm. favourite
yeah,
is. We
will.
Love it.
We always do. At STTE Podcast on Twitter, facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast.
And we'll read them out. You
we'll
know what I mean? You get
out.
Your moment
bloody
of fame.
Well. Right. We'll do it. We'll do it right here.
We'll read them out to 60,000 plus people. Think of that.
Unless you're a mentalist. We're not well, reading out
then,
mentalists.
Then we've got restrictions.
Well, you say that. Nah. We've read things out from people, then seen their Twitter feeds and realised we've read out stuff of walking mentalists. So maybe we need to have a look at their Twitter feeds first before we read out their drivel.
Yeah. But yeah, keep them coming.
Keep them coming, though. All welcome.
Game show.
Round two. We'll take list of questions. We'll give away more crazy-ass prizes, that ridiculously big Batman bundle, all that kind of malarkey. So, see you in 2 weeks. Sleep, thinking I won't be gone.